Blog Talk Radio.
November 1st, All Saints Day, live from Charlotte, North Carolina. We are here. This is The Last Word with Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry, and my grandson sitting over there watching his DVD, I hope. Yes.
So how was your Halloween, Mike?
Man, I have to show you the pictures.
Yeah. I saw some
they were
creepy,
scared.
Long-clawed, skeletonized.
Did I send you something?
Yeah, I saw one on your daughter's.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the joy
yeah,
of Facebook. Yeah. I was virtually here.
These grandkids are the little upset. I was not. That wasn't me. No, that was not me. Yeah. Oh, grandson told him that he was scared. He knows it was me.
The witch I married.
Ooh. Yeah, well, see? And that's a Mississippi witch. Oh, I'm talking with my
I don't know if you actually were heard.
I don't know if I was heard, but I saw the Mississippi witch.
Yes. My beautiful wife.
Yeah. That's your problem now. You see what she really is after all these years.
Yes.
See?
After all these years.
Terrible. Well, we have a full-packed show, and I want everybody to hear something. Yeah, my grandson's okay, but everybody needs to hear this.
With respect to the respect to the man you this is a man you stand up. A long time ago, I was in Burma, and my friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine.
abandoned. Had been throwing them away.
So why steal them?
Well, because he thought it was good sport. Because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Like a coal factory.
And the moral of what Alfred was trying to explain to Bruce, who is no dummy, just couldn't understand why he would rob, steal all the jewels, and then throw them away, not to have or to enrich himself.
Right.
But he was enriching himself, because to him, it wasn't the importance of the jewelry.
It wasn't the money.
It wasn't the money. It wasn't power. He had power because he instilled fear.
That's what he was after.
In other people. And just like the Joker in Batman, we have the French Joker in the French senator, Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Because these so-called Tea Partiers, they're just out to tear the whole thing down.
Well, you see,
they're not building anything.
But they didn't have a leader. They didn't have a leader until Ted Cruz came around. They didn't have a leader who could say, it's all right to have the house burned down.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right if you're out in the street with no money because you just burnt down the house.
That's the way we want it.
And the question is, why would they want it that way? And you know what the answer is? Just because. They want it that way just because. There's no realization that they're going to make anything out of it, because they know darn well that they won't. Nothing can come of this. Nothing whatsoever.
Well, here's the thing. People have to realize, and if you look at the state of the world, like especially that which is called, you know, poor term, but the third world. You look at the chaos, the war, famine, everything else. It's all.
It's similar.
Well, yeah, it's manufactured.
Right.
So
of course, it's manufactured.
If you look all over, we have made, and this is the bad thing that, you know, America gets a bad rap realistically for, with all corporations and politics aligning. But we will go into places. Like, you know, I mean, the Congo has been falling apart for 20 years and nobody's ever done anything about it. We've had places like, you know, Ethiopia and everywhere, even Vietnam at the time, were places where there was almost a fostered disintegration of order. And countries like Russia or
yeah,
China,
but it
was, or
it was,
America,
I think you're being
France.
Too kind. Well, it's a feudalistic society that they have created.
Oh yeah, no, because when there's order, you know, you can't exploit. When there's law and order, you cannot exploit people. And when you go into a broken system, just like we do, you know, in the Middle East or anywhere else, you go into systems where you can ravage the resources and take advantage of the locals because they have no safety net.
But
no,
the problem is, and we're going to get
no
to
government.
This later, they're doing the same thing here in Charlotte with this phony citizen review board.
Well, they're doing it across the board. This is, look, there's a really great book a while back talking about there's a certain group, you know, we've talked about Cheney 100 times, but there's a certain group of politicians in America who have, for the last, you know, 40 years, foisted on the world a severe form of economic exploitation. where they would go into countries like Argentina or Chile, and they would put in a puppet, but at the same time destroy the economy of the country. And then using their puppet and the companies, they would extract all the wealth of the country, everything from the coal to the gold to the water, everything that they can exploit, they would take out of the country. And the people are left with nothing. They're standing around in, rubble, wondering what happened because their economy and their society has collapsed. But it's a manufactured collapse. And the thing that she had warned about in this book was that it would eventually to America, and it would be used on America because the model had been proven successful overseas. Now, I don't want to sound, conspiratorial, but these guys.
But it is conspiratorial.
Yeah, but these people.
Like, so, Peter, we're here to bring out the facts. It's conspiratorial. The fact is, they want people to have less than them, so they want a feudalistic society where the kings on the hill have it all. The people ask for that. The Tea Party is asking for that.
Oh, I know.
They're asking for that, but it's because they don't understand what they're getting. So they had to get a leader who would come down there and tell them, yes, you have a right to be poor, and you have a right to not to ask for anything for us. We're only here to let you be like you are.
Yeah.
Nothing. Because we're not giving you anything.
Well,
because when you give you anything, we have to take more from you. They don't understand it. When they don't give them anything, they need more.
Right.
And we're not giving anything. We are taking money from you to build roads so you can ride on the road. We're taking money from you to build schools so your child can get an education. We're going to take tax money from you to make sure that you have a good health care system.
Well,
we're taking money from you to make a big airport so you can fly and go anywhere. We're taking money from you to help build the railroads. We're taking money from you to build the buses. And that's a form of taxes. You don't grow unless you have taxes to get from one side to the other side. Now, Eisenhower came in and saw this. He's the one who produced this great road system we had.
Yeah.
I mean, and how did he do it? He didn't take the money out of his pocket. I mean, what don't these people understand about how taxes helps them?
That's why I like, there's a great quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes, great thinker, but he says, I like to pay taxes. You know, taxes are good because with taxes, I buy civilization.
That's correct.
And you know what? It costs money.
That's right.
Things don't magically appear. There aren't any little fairies that build your roads and build your water system and build your electrical system and allow us to live in the comfort of our cities and without invasions. You know,
well,
all
then,
this stuff takes money.
Yes, well, then what don't these people understand that if they don't help their government, they're not helping themselves? What? You look at every single civilization that has where you had the government run and not help the little person. That was feudalism.
Yeah.
That was Caesar.
That's why we set up this country is to get the escape system.
Right. And everybody agreed that you needed to pay some sort of. We're not paying homage to these leaders.
No. But
some of them ain't worth a damn. You're right. Some of them ain't worth a damn. But most of them are there. Most of them. The Tea Party is less than, I'd say, 9-10% of the 12% of the entire government. But they can bring down a government because some people just are not involved enough.
Yeah. Well, I think people need to wake up. Here's the only way that the Tea Party, well, the Tea Party is just the the little face, the little ad campaign of this movement. But this movement, some people call it neoliberalism, some people call it, you know, shock doctrine, some people call it whatever by these extremists. But they get away with it only because this country is so strong and powerful, being the wealthiest nation on earth, that it is still surviving. A lot of these smaller countries, like what they did to Indonesia, I mean, I would urge anyone, the book I was talking about earlier is called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. I would love anybody, she called it disaster capitalism, I call it pirate capitalism, whatever you want to call it. She said these people, these neoconservatives, go out and they literally just raid economies like they used to raid companies.
Yes.
They go in and they destabilize the government so that there's no legal system to stop them, and then they extract all the wealth from the company, country. And they're doing it here. The thing that is keeping us going is the fact that we have so much wealth, we haven't destabilized fully yet. Now, they've already collapsed the economy twice during terms under the Bush regimes. But both times we were able to pull out of the nosedive and, you know, resurrect the economy. But this time, of course, we pulled out very shallowly and barely resurrected the economy. But the problem is they are short-terming. All they care about is themselves in the short term. If they can extract a couple of billion or a couple of trillion, you know, they're good. You know, it's just like Cheney when he was over in Iraq, you know, he got that illegal $10 billion delivered with no earmarking, no anything else, and then just vanished, and they've never found it. Where did it go? You know,
well, back to Cheney. He took it with him.
Right,
they didn't get no money.
Bank account.
He took it. He said, see, this is the money we were going to promise. Now we're going to see. Well, it's just like that. It's just like the Citizens Reward. We're going to give you access to this money. What does access mean? See it?
Yeah.
You see and it. You see it,
see
and
it
now you don't.
You see it in my account.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now,
no,
but,
so the thing is, it's short-term wealth. Like, he makes the money right now. The Koch brothers make money right now. The cutting the taxes on everybody, you know, that's why the goals are, just like in old England, instead of stopping an aristocracy from forming, you know, they want to undo all of that. They want to take away the estate tax. You know, the estate tax was put into America solely to redistribute the wealth back into the system and the country so that you could not form an aristocracy. So that when you died, 50% of your properties and everything else went back to the country and got to go to the next generation instead of everybody
Bank
having
account.
Their own manor
Swiss.
And everybody being a lord of something, something, and then a few serfs floating around.
Well,
the
but
the thing is, you've got this thing where people, they're extracted, they're wanting to stop everything from them now. You can't sustain that. We've already seen our economies broken and hurting severely right now. If you did it a few more times, a few more shocks, the country's going to collapse.
Well, but you see, this is...
They're worried about them now.
Well, listen, this is what they're saying. Listen to this.
The reality is that American poor people are not malnourished. They, in fact, eat too much food.
When the safety net becomes a hammock.
My contention is that the Obama administration is encouraging parasites to come out and, you know, take as much as they can with no remorse. And this is how a country declines. This is how we become a weak nation.
30%. That's how many more Americans, according to a new study, are selling food stamps for cash illegally. No, Steve, that's not legal. Nearly 48 million people receive food stamps. The program costs $80 billion a year.
The government has reached into American neighborhoods and says it's okay to be dependent.
Shouldn't there be at least some stigma?
No, here's the thing. This thing.
I love the shame you try to throw. Yeah. Shouldn't
there
be a
thing? Listen. All right, now.
Oh, you poor.
I have never been on food stamps. I know people who have been on food stamps.
Right.
There is no way, unless the store is working with you, that you can sell food stamps to Joe Blow on the street and have Joe Blow use those food stamps. You can't. Because every time you go and use a food stamp, you have to show an ID and a picture ID. So how does Michael Lawson sell food stamps to Thomas Fortenberry and Thomas Fortenberry go into Food Lion and use them?
Right. It's just
how you have to show the ID with the
right.
same serial number. It's not just a
a thing that says food stamps, $20 on it. It don't say that. They have to lie.
Again, look, this is, even if somebody managed somehow with fake IDs and everything else and the black market and all that to do that, it's like anything else. I mean, that's somebody somewhere sold some drugs today. Somebody
really?
Somewhere, you know, probably stole something and sold it, you know, a watch, a ring or something. You know, somebody probably.
Yeah, but the watch, the ring don't have ID that you have to show. Now, here's the other thing with this saying. This says, should there be some stigma?
Right.
There are 900,000 military people, veterans, on food stamps. 900,000 have been on food stamps.
Right.
Now, are we talking about a stigma from some fat, old, lying fool who never picked up a gun and stood post for his country? Are we going to believe that?
This is one of the things
from
like,
Bill O'Reilly and that moron who just spoke and the guy that's in the wheelchair on Fox and all these people about. Are we going to believe that from someone who does not, who has said time and time again, we do not need to give the military working people, not the corporate entities that built the YF-22, we're not talking about them, the people, the grunts on the ground, we don't need to give them a raise.
Right.
We don't need to protect their health care. We don't care what happens after they come back with combat fatigue. We don't care about anything about the military. These are fat, lying fools who never helped this country, ever. And Rush Limbaugh is the biggest fat butt fool there is.
Right. Well, look, you know, people like Dick Cheney with his five deferments and the rest of them. You remember, we went through that whole era, and we called them all out. We even did shows on all of these guys who were never served but sat there, and they would tell everybody else not patriotic. You know, you remember that. But anyway, enough of that. Here's the problem with America. We've got a system where we're shaming the poor, but yet our system is set up
to make poor, more poor.
Right.
Right.
So we have minimum wage that hadn't moved in 30 or 40 years that is so minimal that if you work 40 hours a week, you're gainfully employed. I'm not talking about you're sitting around, you know, on the couch and your hammock
okay.
that he talked about or something. You're gainfully employed, working full-time at a job. Now, you can't possibly even make minimum wage, minimum levels of poverty in this country. Do you know that?
And, you know, that's right.
You can't even get on the board.
Well,
so then you're going to be one of the, quote-unquote, freeloaders. So if you're a full-time employee in America at anything that is a average job, you're dead in the water.
Well, first of all, in Texas, the
Great Lone Star.
The French senator from Texas,
yes,
Ted Cruz, doesn't use the health care that he gets as a senator.
Because it's too beneath him.
Yes.
He gets more.
Because he uses the health care that his wife uses, the
banking industry.
No, she works on Wall Street.
Oh, I thought she was a banker. She just
she works on Wall Street, and I will tell you who she works for. I think it's not Salomon Brothers. It's I'll tell you in a minute.
All you got to do is look at the list.
It's one of
the criminal organizations that caused the last or something.
It was one of the ones that died and came back. I'll tell you this, man.
Not with Bear.
No. It's bigger than the Bear Insurance. It's the biggest one on the street now.
The biggest one.
The biggest one on the field. Let me tell you. Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs.
His wife works for Goldman Sachs.
Sachs of gold.
And they have a $20,000, over a $20,000, excuse me, health care plan a year.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? his wife doesn't pay for it. Goldman Sachs pays it for her.
Which means that they...
Which means Goldman Sachs... Right, no, yes, customer pays for it, but also they deduct it on their income tax.
Oh,
so that means we are paying for Ted Cruz's health care system.
I think that's called a golden hammock, Mike.
Golden hammock. So over.
But how is that not a
change? Well, I'm going to show you.
Poor average worker is a loser.
It's even worse than that because the average full-time person making minimum wage in Texas makes $15,500. So Ted Cruz's health insurance policy is worth more than the average person gets in Texas who makes minimum wage. Full-time person.
Yeah. And that's all they make completely.
$15,080.
Their health.
That's what
their,
they make a year.
That's
so
what they can live on.
They don't, and most of them, which is why Texas has the biggest health care negativity than any state in the union. I think Florida is next. Mississippi has more people on insurance than Texas and Florida. So these people are the people that we need to listen to. Does this make any sort of sense whatsoever? When that's why he can talk down, because he's talking down to every one of those ignorant people in Texas in his district. I make more than you in a health care system.
Mm-hmm.
So you are the serfs in my kingdom. And another question I have to ask. I mean, I'm just full of questions today. When the boat people came out of Cuba, whenever they come out of Cuba, where do they go first?
That Disney World that we have attached to America.
Florida.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell did Ted Cruz's father get to Canada?
He was a refugee from Cuba and
yes.
ended up in Canada.
I don't know any boat that goes from Cuba to Canada.
You know, it's 90 miles across
right.
and 9,000 more.
Right.
If you paddle hard, ha. You can actually.
Yeah, but on cement?
You get right up the.
He go up the Hudson
all,
River?
All the way up. No,
how do you get from the Florida
you
to Hudson
go
River?
All the way up and then come down the bay and enter through
oh,
the.
Oh, so he went up through
lake.
The.
Yeah.
That what was
Saint
it
Lawrence.
Called? The Hudson St. Lawrence
yeah,
Seaway
whole,
connection?
Yeah. That,
and through the lake around Vancouver. How did he get to Canada?
He was
now,
paddling hard.
Did he have something in his background that would not have let him come into Florida
mm-hmm.
or the United States?
Did
he have something? He wasn't, well, you know, it's just like Romney. Romney's family was run out of the United States because of the laws that they were violating with the 18 wives and the 15 wives,
right,
the
right,
polygamy.
Right.
So they had to go to Mexico.
Right. So, again, these are people who flee law-abiding areas, go to something that they can exploit, and then later, when there's not enough money to be had in said exploited land, they come back here to get more.
Right. Well, this is what I want to say. How did and did he get to Canada from Cuba?
Well,
how did it happen? How are you able to do that?
Well, what I love is the fact that Ted Cruz's father, you know, is best known now for being in the news by constantly saying that Obama should go back to Kenya.
Well, yeah. Well,
right.
this is.
But this is a guy. I just love the irony of it. So this is a Canadian.
Who don't even live here?
Cuban.
Does he live here now?
Claiming. Yeah, he lives in Texas now, but he wants a.
Is he a tech,
you know,
is he an American citizen?
Obama's guy. I have no idea. I look it up.
Oh, is he on a visa? Yeah, look it up and see if he's on. But this is the question that I have. How do we tell someone who was born in a communist country, who fled a communist country, did not go to the home of the free and the home of the brave, but went to Canada, had a son there in Canada, and then come down here and tell a
which,
person
by the way,
who was born in the United States
that Ted Cruz has dual citizenship.
Oh, Ted Cruz, yeah. But he has to give that up in order to become president.
Right.
Because you can't have dual citizenship.
Right.
Now, what I want to know is, how can he tell a man who was born in Hawaii that he needs to go back to Chicago and then back to Kenya?
Yeah. Well, look.
The nerve.
But,
no, I mean, you can say anything you want, but
also
there needs to be some sort of psychological reasoning that you can relate. You know, it's just like Blake, my five-year-old grandson now is learning how to connect 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in line so he can recognize numbers. No sequence in 5, 6, and what's the blank one? Next one's going to be 7. Next one's going to be 8. He needs to how do we connect the dots here to show how this man did not stop in the United States or was deported to Canada? Was he deported to Canada?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Is there anything you got his dossier up so we can tell how he got from Cuba to Canada and why? I'm sure it's not going to say it's probably been wiped clean.
Yeah.
Because
it's just interesting. I'm just looking now. I'm trying to look up his legal status of his father, but it puts up Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
Right, his father's not legal.
Now listen to this. This is just something else that just popped off of Wiki here. He failed to disclose. Ted Cruz himself now failed to disclose his ties to a Jamaican holding company, which is an ethical violation is being investigated on, a Caribbean-based holding company. During the 2012 campaign, he never revealed he had investments there, holding money in a private equity firm founded by his college roommate but run on offshore company. Yeah. So again, here are these.
What can you find about his father?
Pro-American.
His father.
I'm looking. I'm
what's his name? Ruben Cruz or what's his name? I don't know. I just have a problem. You know, not that I stayed up all
look,
night thinking about
the
it.
Irony.
But I was going to go with his father for as Halloween. But anyway,
the irony of these guys, though, that these are the last presidential campaign from the Republican Party featured a guy whose family literally fled with their polygamous family too.
Criminal.
And then he came back. So there are Mexican immigrants that came back here. And then the feature of his campaign was get rid of the Mexicans, have them deport themselves. I mean, the irony is amazing.
Self-deportation.
Yeah, self-deportation. And here we got a guy who likes to attack, even his father attacks Barack Obama for being an alien. And these guys are literally
aliens.
Immigrants from communist, and used to. Could you imagine anybody? Could you imagine during the we're going to find all the communists phase of our government? Could you imagine at the height of the Cold War, guy who is the son of a Cuban and Canadian serving in our Congress?
they're saying, oh, he's so much like.
His status is actually a lot murkier than
his father's guy.
Because he was actually born in Canada.
Yeah, right. Of course, we know that.
But he has dual citizenship, and he can only claim it through his mother, maybe.
Right. Well, that's how he's claiming it.
But it's just interesting that he's
he can become president because his mother was born in the United States. Now, if that's the case. Why aren't they saying, even if Barack Obama was born in freaking Russia, his mother's an American citizen. So he's automatically an American citizen. What's the difference between Barack Obama and Ted Cruz? Because Barack Obama's black. Only difference. This has just got to stop this nonsense. For the people who believe this are so ignorant. They're not ignorant. They're racist.
They are, and that's what it's.
Period.
For. This is why this whole ginned up argument is for.
Of it's course like, it is. It's a racial argument.
It's got nothing to do with politics. It's got nothing to do with anything else.
No, absolutely nothing.
Do you remember what's his name? Straight Talk Express was born in Panama. I mean,
Right.
So I mean, look, it's just ridiculous.
He was born on an American installation. It didn't matter. His mother was born in the United States. So it does not matter. Gee whiz, why didn't this come up when President Obama was running for office and we wouldn't have had? Did that fool in New York, Ted, comb my hair over? Did he know that all it had to be is your mother has to be born here?
What kind of
not your father, your mother, and your automatic. So why do they keep saying that he has to go back to Kenya? His mother was an American citizen. What don't they understand about this?
Hey, guess what?
What?
You want to know his full name?
Whose full name?
Ted.
Ted? Ruben Ted, Cruz?
His actual name is Rafael,
oh, yeah, Rafael
Edward Cruz.
Right.
And he goes by Ted because it sounds more American. I guess Rafael doesn't have that zinger of a
no,
guy.
I mean, if you were Zorro, maybe, but that's about it. I want to know about the father.
He's a geophysical consultant, quote-unquote, from Montazas, Cuba.
Why?
He's named after him. His name is Rafael
Bienvenido.
Right.
Cruz. Rafael.
Rafael. I don't know about his status, though.
Does it say why he fled from Cuba? Does it say when he fled from Cuba?
It says this. His father was imprisoned in Cuba.
Yeah.
As part of Fidel Castro's movement to overthrow the dictatorship.
Well, oh, wait a minute. Does he say this, or did he defect?
Well, it says he rarely ever speaks about his past or his...
Gee, I wonder why.
He was a guerrilla throwing Molotov cocktails and blowing up buildings.
So he says. We have any copies of that? I was a Ninja Turtle, too.
He said he was beaten by Dictator Batista's soldiers in prison. And only his own... Oh, he bribed his way out.
And where did he get the money from?
I don't know.
Where did he get the money from?
Probably those Bush boys.
Yeah, they were involved in that.
Probably, like, wandered over to the Bay of Pigs and picked up a packet of money. It said then he... got freed in 57, and somehow via Canada ended up...
Oh, wait. We go to 57 and somehow via Canada? Why didn't he go to the United States of America?
It says, it just goes, while earning a degree in mathematics at UT, Cruz spoke at the Office
UT,
of Business
UT, Cruz. We're talking about Utah State?
I don't know what UT is. Lauding Castro's revolution.
Lauding?
After the victories in 59, hearing from relatives about what Cruz was doing, giving speeches of where Cruz then returned to the same business groups and apologized. Ted Cruz says, my father's been my hero my whole life. He was a revolutionary. So he was a communist revolutionary overthrowing the capitalist society and blowing up buildings with Molotov cocktails. And he was put in prison for doing so. And then he was bought out of prison by someone that brought him to America and gave him
a... No, but what does it say America? I, how do you get from...
I don't know.
How? You know, you can't go get off Cuba and get to Utah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Isn't that weird? It doesn't say. I'll have to investigate further.
Google Utah State and see if you can find anything on Rafael Cruz.
Yeah, I'm looking.
I mean, you know, people are just stupid.
Interesting. So he is a communist?
So he was a communist. He was a communist?
He worked for Fidel.
Fidel?
He
worked for a communist.
And then he somehow magically got spirited out of prison into America.
Okay, but wait. He was put in prison by Castro because of why?
No, by the...
Oh, by Batista.
Government, Batista.
Okay.
That Castro overthrew.
Okay.
So Batista was our boy.
Right.
And then isn't it weird that he got bought out? Who did the buying?
So he's also a traitor.
Well, here's something
interesting. He's a Cuban traitor then.
We were. Now, we funded.
We were.
We funded.
Michael Corleone
no,
and the American government.
We funded Castro and them until
That's
he
right.
got out of control when he got in power and told us to, you know, go after ourselves. And then we got mad about it and then we tried to kill him.
Right.
But. So apparently he was part of that, and then somehow somebody bought him out of prison and got him here. But oh, that's real murky. It isn't in the internet.
So he wasn't a boat person, like he claims he was.
Isn't this interesting?
So he wasn't a boat person, because I just don't know how you could be a boat person and get up to Cuba, these states, or magically fly Toronto. How's that possible?
But Rafael Cruz is famous for giving speeches that he calls this the Christian nation that's going to save the earth.
Christian nation. So, all right, we need to have something on this murky Rafael.
Yes. I'm going to have to look.
Sounds like something from a Tom Clancy movie, Rafael. How did Rafael, was he always a CIA plant?
And is that why he's in Texas with the other Bushes that ran?
The CIA?
I mean, Bush ran the CIA and was part of the Bay of Pigs down there in that operation. He was head of the Caribbean Command or whatever down there. That's why he's based in Texas. And then, you know, this guy ends up down there. Ain't that a coinkydink?
Coinky dink, coinky dink.
And you know how I feel about those.
I don't believe as a lot of people don't know this, but there used to be a story on TV, Amos and Andy, and the Kingfish always used to say, it was the first black television show on TV, and the Kingfish always used to say, it's too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. Rafael is too much of a coincidence not to be not true. Because we now know that he was a communist.
And you know what's interesting about this is that he's a 74-year-old evangelical pastor, and yet they said Cruz keeps him as his political consultant and confidant and works on his campaigns full time and even goes in his place. If he can't make any venues, he goes in his place and speaks for him. So isn't that a violation? I mean, you can't...
No, you can have... I can have my grandson speak for me. That'll be nothing.
But you can't have... church and politics.
Well, as long as you don't do it in a church. But, of course, these evangelicals can have a church in a freaking wood with things all around them. Young man, are you finished with your story? Okay. I'm talking to my grandson, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway... He's also one of the guests in the studio here. Blake, come over here. Say hello to the people. Say hello. Hello, speak up.
Hello, strangers.
So how old are you?
How old are you?
No, don't say how old you are. What are you, a comedian now? Say, I am how old? Say that.
Five.
Five, you're not sure? Are you sure you're five?
Yes.
Who told you that?
I just had a birthday a few months ago.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, goodbye. Sit down now. You can watch the rest of Ninjago.
Here's an interesting...
Yes.
Just an interesting... I mean, I'm reading on National Review about how they're
what a reputable...
with them. because they said that they were showing a father and son working together to save America, and it is inspiring values voters. But anyway... In this article I'm reading, it says Rush Limbaugh especially loves Rafael Cruz, and he is compared. He said that one of his favorite phrases that he ever did was he loved when Rafael compared the president's hope and change message to Fidel Castro's appeal, and said that's just like he's got the same appeal as a commie. Now this is
he was a
double,
commie.
No,
wait,
no, this is.
Still is a commie.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I see you go.
They're saying that he compared President Obama's hope and change message to Fidel Castro, a communist, and Rush Limbaugh loved that and said, "You see, Obama's a communist." Now, the hysterical irony of this is that Rafael Cruz was
a communist,
a commie, and on top of that,
maybe he still is.
He worked for Castro.
That's right.
And yet they're using that as the derogatory against Obama.
But he still is a commie.
Isn't that hysterical?
It doesn't say that he has renounced the commie. Does it say anywhere that he is no longer a commie?
No. But again, what the heck? What hypocrisy. He was a Castro communist, and he's saying, look at that president. He's
well,
a Castro communist.
Yeah, you were talking about the newspapers before. Let me play you a little something here about these newspaper interviews that they're using, the Republicans. It's just unbelievable.
How come the homosexuals aren't defending us Christians with our right to be able to express ourselves?
At what point has your right to express yourself been infringed upon?
I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm concerned about it. I have a radio show. I'm just concerned about any oppression that may come.
Sure.
That people might say, Matt, you can't say that on the radio, that homosexuality is a sin.
But you can't even go on the radio anymore and condemn a whole subset of people to hell without getting some blowback.
Well, when you put it that way, it does sound rather arrogant and myopic, narrow-minded and bigoted.
Good. Then I've done my job.
Well, what they're saying is that The Daily Show had reporters go out, and these Republicans just tell them exactly what they mean, what they say, or how they feel. I mean, it's because they don't think, I don't know, you got a camera there, you know you're on the air, just like that fool, the Republican the precinct chair who said exactly what he was thinking, and the reporter asked him, you know you're on the air, he said yes.
Yeah, I know.
But they're at the point now, they don't care.
They don't care. I mean, look at this. This is, for instance, could you imagine this even occurring in politics? But
yes.
Before, but listen.
Oh, before,
now.
No.
So Rafael Cruz, here's another one. Rafael Cruz, last year and this year, both, he works in one Irving, Texas megachurch that helped elect Cruz to his senatorship. In sermons there, he calls him touched by God and the anointed one of God, and that God has predestined him for greatness, and that he is the anointed one chosen to lead America, his son. So that's what he tells his church. Now, can you imagine any time in the past that even being allowed near where you have a guy's father running around telling you that he is the quote-unquote anointed one by God, and that he's come to lead America?
Well, you know,
this is madness. I mean, it is almost ludicrous, except,
you know,
that they're actually making.
Yes, it would be sad. I was watching on Lawrence O'Donnell last night. They had Penn from Penn and Teller, and they had, I forgot what Father Catholic preacher was. Penn, not Penn, Teller. Okay. And he's the big one, right? Yeah. Anyway, so tell her who is a devout atheist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty funny about it.
And the priest, who's been a priest for 30 years, he said he wants them to do an interview to have the priest convince Teller to believe in God. So the first words out of the priest said, out of his mouth, was that in 1 minute, that I have to convince him to become a believing person, I'd have to be God. He said, and I ain't far from that. He says, you have to come along willingly. Christ didn't say, follow me or I'm going to beat you with this cross that I have. He said, follow me. And then you went. He said, so when I got to Teller, he said, you know, I hear this all the time for every single religious person. They never beat me over the head. They say, come on, why don't you just follow me? They don't beat me. He said, you know, maybe if I got a beating once or twice, I might listen to them. He said, but they always ask the same way. There's no point of beating me over the head. He says, but you know, we got some of these guys out there that are telling you you're going to be damned forever in hell.
I have something for
you. Uh-oh.
Now, this is on the standingforliberty.com website, so take it for what it is. But their own bio of Rafael B. Cruz, which he may or may not have written, but it's rather illuminating. And what we were just talking about, you know, heard like he was literally bought out of prison. Da-da-da-da-da, you know, this
right.
is that fuzziness of how
right.
we, yeah.
right.
listen how they cover this. Rafael B. Cruz is a powerful example of the American dream. He was born in Cuba and there lived and suffered under a cruel, oppressive dictator. He began fighting Batista's regime as a teenager, and then was then imprisoned and tortured for simply wanting to be free. Then Rafael arrived in Texas in 1957.
Wait.
He arrived in 1957 with nothing but the clothes on his back and $100 bills sewn in his underwear.
How did he get from Cuba to Texas?
He got a job as a dishwasher, making 50 cents an hour. And he worked his way through the University of Texas.
What, 50 cents an hour he worked his way to the University
UT
of Texas?
UT is, by the way.
Huh?
UT, University of Texas. That's where he ended up.
Oh, okay. UT, the Utah.
Then he later furthered his pursuit of the American dream. He became active in conservative politics and joined the campaign of Ronald Reagan. He then joined the State Board of Religious Roundtables. And he became a grassroots founder of the Judeo-Christian organizations to promote the future of political dialogue in America. He's the director of the Purifying Fire Ministries. And he now ministers in the U.S., Mexico, and Central America.
What about Canada?
Not even mentioned. Not even once. Ain't that something?
Is there something wrong with this?
The face they present to their crowd is that he was a suffering, tortured teen, and then he magically arrived in Texas with $100 bill sewn in his wife. And the facts that we just read a minute ago was that he worked for Castro, tried to overthrow the government, was caught.
But he didn't say that in this.
And then we bought him out of prison, and then we bought him somewhere, secreted him in Canada for a while, obviously, because he was there while Ted was born and everything else. But then somehow he got down in 57 back to Texas and started going to school and everything. It's kind of interesting, this whole big murky spot in his life. And then I think it's very, very illuminating that a guy who worked for Castro, which was our puppet to overthrow the Batista regime for the CIA, ends up in Texas, working for conservative political parties.
At the time JFK was assassinated.
At the time where Bush was the CIA agent in the CIA, and then as soon as he became president, right before he became president, under Nixon, he became the head of the entire CIA. But he was the head of that division then. But isn't that weird that he ends up there, and he's one of their operatives in Cuba. And then now he's one of the big voices in the Republican Party. It just never stops. It's funny.
Now, you know that this needs to be exploited by his father. If they can exploit that pastor that Barack Obama attended the church.
Look, here's the thing that gets
why can't they do that with this fool?
Because people pay attention. The hypocrisy of it is, this guy himself goes on Rush, which I just told you Rush's favorite line from him is that he compares Obama to Castro and a communist when he
worked
was
for him.
A actual Castro communist.
Well, how do we know he's not? Is there anywhere in any of his bios that he has renounced the Castro communist regime?
No, there's not even any detail of anything.
So the only detail that he was connected with Castro was in that first one. Where was that? I want you to mark that so I can download that and put it on. Oh, by the way, I'm having a new website.
Oh, yeah.
The website should be up next week, ladies and gentlemen, and it's called Michael Lawson Last Word. .com.
Well, that was pithy. It's almost like that's what it is.
That's just what it is. No, we left out the.
So
it's Michael Lawson, lastword.com. We'll be coming at you next week sometime, or the end of next week. I hope by my show, I'm going to call my cousin who created it, because she lives in Canada, in Toronto. So we're going to have a little bit about the mayor up there who's smoking crack. We're going to have a little bit about Raphael. We're going to have a little bit about the healthcare system. So we're going to have a little bit about her new project. She's a director, writer, screenwriter, author, musical director, musical writer.
She just finished
her first film,
full-length
film, and I'm waiting for her to tell me when we can see it. So that's what we're going to have next week. And then also next week, we are going to have, for you people that live in Rio Limba, as Russ Limba says, we're going to have the definitions, democracy, what a Republican is, what a conservative is, what a theocrat is, what a communist is, what a socialist is, what a fascist is.
Because, again...
And a Marxist.
These things actually matter.
Because most people think that just describes President Obama. And we're also going to have the fact you could be born on Planet X if your mother was born here in this country as an American citizen. You're automatically an American. So they need to stop talking about papers, please. Because then we need to ask for Raphael's papers and Ted's
papers. Let me tell you something real quick. Monday or whenever it was, I started the voting. I ran down to the local library, went to vote, and I was talking with the lady there in line because we got there early because I wanted to be first in line, you know me. So I'm there, and we go in together. And this was a very nicely dressed professional woman, happens to be African-American. We go up together. We're the first two people called, go up to the desk. And they just ask, what's your name and number, all that kind of stuff. But I went ahead and whipped out my ID, handed it to them. And so then lady did too. She whipped out her ID anyway. I'm being handed my ballot and taken to the thing. The guy on her is still going, now what's your middle name? What's your maiden name? I'm not finding, I don't know. There's something different here. You got like two middle names or something. And she, well, that's my married name. Well, I don't know. This doesn't seem valid. I might have to look. Still going at her 5 minutes later. And she had her ID. She had everything. But it just goes to say there's something not right. And it's
BS. And where did this occur?
It's just at the Steel Creek Library. Right at the regular voting. But I was sitting there looking at this woman like, oh, my. Because I got the, my name is, yeah, okay, here you go. And she got the. Let's see. Got some blood.
We're going to have on Robin Bradford, who's the Democratic chair of McMurray County. We're going to talk about that because I want to find out if they changed the chair of downtown. Were you the main site? What do you call that? The commission that's the head of voting. What do you call it? Michael Dickerson.
What's that now?
Michael Dickerson downtown, who is, let me just look this up. He is the Dickerson. He is, Michael Dickerson is the, no, he is the McMurray County, what do you call that? I see. The one that does the, who's the head of everything. You want to find out anything about the board of election? I'm sorry, geez. My mind is going blank here. Michael Dickerson, but I don't know if they changed that. They still have, if they changed, because he was the head of the board of election for years because we had a Republican, we had a Democratic governor. I don't know if that changed here. Change the chair. Is it still a Democratic chair?
Oh,
Michael Dickerson is still in control of that. I have no idea.
But I did hear this is the last election, right, that you can do the party line vote. After this, it's going to be individual, take individual candidates. You can't just choose Democratic.
Straight party, right. No
this is the last one.
Right.
So here, one last thing on Ted, just to let you know. Back as much as 2011, Dallas News here says that they are having a hard time finding out the details of his father. They said on some occasions since 2005, Politician Ted Cruz has publicly mentioned the date of his father's departure from Cuba and even the fact that he had fought on the same side as Fidel Castro. However, in the past few months, our newspapers found no instances in which he's offered an audience any clue that his father was a pre-Castro exile, because it turns out that his father actually departed more than a year before Castro came to power. And there's some murkiness over what happened and how. So, you know, he was in prison during that time, then he got bought out, and da-da-da-da-da. But again, and then they said that we've
asked. So he didn't go back to help Castro.
So they said tons of times they've asked him, and there's been no clarification. And the only thing that he said is, Pecker says, oh, now y'all know my heart. My dad's my hero. He fled Cuba, and he was in prison and tortured there.
He fled Cuba because he was bought out by the CIA to rat on Castro.
Even in 2011, Dallas News was having trouble finding the truth. They could not get a verification on dates and how and when, and it's all murky. So it's not just me looking around. I can't, you know, there's a big black hole here as to what and who and why, and that just smacks all day long of the way our usual. So, yeah,
well, I have a little bit that I'd like to play about that. Yes, sir, as we go in deep in the heart of Texas to find out what Rafael Cruz really is. Does he work for the Ewing family? The CIA? Who?
Has he just been beating out bushfires?
That's right.
No.
Did he really escape as an exilee? Is he still a communist? Is he the Manchurian candidate that produced a son that's going to be president who is also a communist from Canada?
Talking about your Kenyan conspiracies to put in a son to take over America. Well, here's an example of a Molotov cocktail throwing, overthrowing revolutionary.
This is
who
it.
Came here and then raised his son as the anointed one, self-proclaimed.
I'm telling you.
Hey, man. Maybe he learned how to make those cocktails from Molotov himself back in Russia.
I don't know, but I think it's pretty, pretty, pretty interesting. Now,
you know, the flip side of this could be that he's just a regular American, has a different point of view, and he can run and do anything he wants, but you don't have to be a jack-off and say stupid things to win and or be a politician.
In order to...
Because this stuff bothers me all day long, how they come up with, you know, every liberal is a crazy terrorist from overseas, but every Republican is a Christian-centered, flag-waving patriot. It's obnoxious.
Well, I'm looking at the clip here, and I'm trying to see how we're going to work this, because I don't know which one is which. But leaving that, we have this guy, Virginia. His name is E.W. Jackson, black guy, Reverend E.W. Jackson. I don't know.
Cuccinelli ourselves, but okay. What?
Well, Cuccinelli is nothing compared to this guy. Nothing. This guy. Oh, let me just play you a little bit of this guy here.
Reverend, you said that the U.S. armed forces are going to be punished by God because of the end of
that's absolutely not true. Categorically not true.
He was interviewed by a CBS affiliate, and because he had mentioned at one time, God is going to damn the United States because we're not God-fearing. So I'll play that one more time. This is what he said.
Reverend, you said that the U.S. armed forces are going to be punished by God because of the end of categorically not true.
He said that the U.S. armed forces in the United States would perish because of the hatred of God and because they're promoting homosexuality. Mm-hmm. He says absolutely, categorically not true. This is what he said.
Reverend, you said that U.S. armed forces are going to be punished by God because of the end of
Okay, here's what he did say.
Reverend, you said that U.S. armed forces are going to be punished by God because of the end of that's absolutely not true. Categorically not true.
I don't know. I got so many, and I didn't label them, so therefore we'll go to the next one, which will be 1, 2, 3. All right, let's play this one. He did say that, but maybe I should have downloaded that. All right, we'll go to the next one in the meantime. All right, now this is another time Jackson was running again. October, this is what he said, October 13th. This is a couple of days. Monday. This is what he said Monday.
Probably most of what they hear the mainstream media from my opponent is not true. Okay, but fine enough. Let's ask you. Did you say that gay people live a sick lifestyle than sick people? Never said that. What I said is I think that the movement, the effort to change the culture, is an effort to pervert things.
So I'll play it to you one more time because you got to understand this.
Probably most of what they hear the mainstream media from my opponent is not true. Okay, but fine enough. Let's ask you. Did you say that gay people live a sick lifestyle than sick people? Never said that. What I've said is I think that the movement, the effort to change the culture, is an effort to pervert things.
So he's saying that he never said that gay people are sick people. He never said that. Okay? So let's go back a year ago. 2012. It just happened to be a year ago, October.
Their minds are perverted. They are, they're frankly very sick people psychologically and mentally and emotionally, and they see everything through the lens of homosexuality. When they talk about love, they're not talking about love. They're talking about homosexual sex.
Now, this is what he said. Yeah, and thanks to Rachel Maddow, I picked him up from her. She was on top of this. You know, people to them are just immobile and dumb objects that they can move around and put in any place that they want. That's how they treat them. That's how they think we are. We are dumb, immobile, and only can be moved in a direction that they want us to be moved in, like chess pieces. Okay.
He's also a guy that said he's been accused of whining a lot because he said the liberal press makes him out to be an intolerant bigot. They give a false impression that I say mean and hateful things. I don't have a hateful bone in my body.
Not one.
Now, what did he say?
Not one.
Evil.
That's exactly what he said.
He won't even like human beings.
He did. That's
but
that
liberal media, by playing his own words, makes him feel like a mean old guy.
Yeah, he's a mean old guy, all right. These are the people that are leading, the Republican Party down the road to perdition.
Yeah, and this is what he wrote in the Washington Times. Democrats have now fully embraced the abortion policy that amounts to infanticide, and they've made the lesbian, homosexual, bisexual, transgender agenda their vision of America. This is how they managed to hold on to the black Christian. How have they managed to hold on to black Christians in spite of this agenda that's worthy of the Antichrist? There's a non-defensive statement. There's a kind.
He didn't say that.
No, he wrote that. He didn't say that. He wrote it. He published it.
He wrote that. So tell me how he can get out of that from saying that he didn't write it.
Yeah. This guy's a real joy.
Here's a question that was asked of one of the Tea Party baggers.
The need for you is to know what you can do, you and your fellow non-communist colleagues in the lower house, what you can do to stop these communist tyrannical executive orders laid down by this foreign-born, American-hating communist despot. What can you do for him?
How can we stop these communist executive orders?
Mm-hmm. And, he's also gotten in trouble for saying, they noted in here that he claims that people who have children with birth defects is caused by their sins. It's just sad. It It really is. And these are the guys that are running for high office in America. But here's one of the problems, I think, and not to be mean. But here's one of the problems with this guy. He's a evangelical Christian minister.
Oh, you mean like Raphael?
He's an evangelical Christian minister, and he's running for public office. That's one of the problems. You should stay at the pulpit, and he shouldn't.
Stay in your lane.
Yes, and they should be distinct and different.
Didn't.
Because, you know what, if he wants to believe it, that's fine, but there's no way to say, you know, what he's trying to do now is say, I'm a fiery evangelical, which by its nature says that, you know, gays are sinners and evil and all these things damned to hell, blah, 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 blah. It didn't say, but I'm going to come over here and be a politician, be fair and nice and sweet to everybody and not bring my views in. That's just BS.
Well, wasn't there a quote, or maybe Christ didn't say it, but render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's the last time I was going ballistic and in between having some of my tequila, blackberry tequila, and the mass was around chasing my grandson and both of them, as a matter of fact. And you know, he knew you were hiding under the table, because he came and told Grandma. But we were here, and we all was chased him outside, so he couldn't come and get you. Yeah, I know. He was outside hiding. Right. That's why you had to run. Well, anyways, I'm telling a little story, but backstory about Halloween last night. Anyway, heard Bill O'Reilly saying, see, now you got me turn around. What was I going to say? Oh, Bill O'Reilly, we were talking about Raphael, and Raphael was saying about that. What were you saying about that? I lost my track of thought.
What?
Yes.
From Halloween to Raphael to Bill O'Reilly, I'm
you lost my track of thought too.
Oh my
anyway,
God.
we'll get back to that. Right. Why don't we just throw a Molotov cocktail? Okay. So in the meantime, we'll talk about from Bill O'Reilly to Halloween to how about
that Michael
Rachel Maddow. Jumping all over Rand Paul for can you give us, what is the definition of plagiarism?
Oh, our favorite. You know, this has been, by the way, a big problem in the Republican Party.
Of course.
Because I guess
they lie all the time and grab from other people.
Can't think for themselves. But do you remember Ann Coulter? When they found out that entire books of hers were lifted from other authors. So just for the record, to make it all official and stuff, but you know, plagiarism is just stealing anybody else's words or thoughts. But anyway, it is the wrongful appropriation of anyone else's language, thoughts, ideas, or expression in any form, their words, their written, verbal or any recorded, so it is the.
So that means what? Well, so that means when I say
taking them and pretending they're yours.
So that means when I say.
Ask
our not. our most common link is that we all inherit this planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future, and we are all mortal.
That's a brilliant statement.
I can't say that was mine.
What? That wasn't yours? You just, what?
No, it was John F. Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy, no wonder it sounded good. That was very elegant.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you.
So who did say that recently?
Well, recently, no one that I know of.
I thought there was
someone. No, that was John F. Kennedy that said it. They haven't lifted that from him yet, but they will.
Okay, so what did
Senator I'm saying, so,
Hall
well, let's just give you a little. Now, this is a little lengthy, but you will hear all the way through it why. And I'm taking it, and I'm grateful to Rachel, who is on top of these guys, even though that lying Ron Paul will give an excuse that well, it's not really style teeth taking it and it's not really using it, and there were more than one person who made it up, and they don't talk to one another, and I gave real reference. He gave no footnote, any note, reference to any movie
or anybody
writer, screenwriter who said those words. He's lying when he says it. Now, let me just play it for you.
Rand Paul speaks. Here's the big headline tonight on the New York Times website. This was just posted within the last hour. Senator Rand Paul is accused of plagiarizing his lines from Wikipedia. On Monday night, we reported on this show that a speech that Senator Paul gave at Liberty University in Virginia appeared to have been partly plagiarized. Senator Paul spoke at length in that speech about a movie called Gattaca, and his descriptions of the movie were lifted basically verbatim from the Wikipedia entry about that movie. The senator did not attribute his remarks to Wikipedia. He just lifted whole passages from the website and said them out loud as if they were his own words. Rand Paul gave the Gattaca Wikipedia entry speech on Monday, and we reported that exclusively here on Monday night. Then on Tuesday, yesterday, BuzzFeed reported that Senator Paul did the same thing with another movie, a movie called Stand and Deliver. He spoke about that movie in a speech earlier this year, and again, he just plagiarized the Wikipedia entry about the movie. BuzzFeed found that bit of plagiarism in a speech that Rand Paul gave in June of this year. Last night, we reported that Senator Paul also plagiarized that same Stand and Deliver Wikipedia entry in a speech that he gave a few months earlier in March. The Wikipedia entry for Stand and Deliver describes the main plot of the film this way. Quote, in the area of East Los Angeles, California in 1982, in an environment that values a quick fix over education and learning, Jaime Escalante is a new teacher at Garfield High School. That's Wikipedia. Here's Rand Paul.
In the area of East L.A. in 1982, in an environment that values a quick fix on education over learning, Escalante was a new math teacher at Garfield High School.
Two clear cases of plagiarism from a sitting U.S. senator in two pretty high-profile speeches. Rand Paul is not just any U.S. senator, though. He is a senator who wants to be president. Plagiarism scandals have dogged presidential candidates before, notably Joe Biden in 1988. It took him a decade or more to recover. This sort of thing has happened before in recent American history, and it has real consequences for candidates for years and years when they do stuff like this. For 2 days now, Senator Paul and his office responded to this evidence of plagiarism by basically not responding at all. The senator would not talk to us. He would not talk to his hometown paper. He would not talk to various other news outlets that tried to get a comment from him on this, some sort of explanation. He just didn't want to talk about it. But tonight, Jorge Ramos has arrived. Jorge Ramos comes to the rescue. Senator Paul sat down for an interview today with Jorge Ramos of Fusion TV. And Mr. Ramos, in that interview, he asked Senator Paul about these instances of plagiarism. He put the charges right to him. Now, I'm going to show you the entire exchange here in just a second, but before I do, I have to say that it seems to me that what's going on in this exchange is that Rand Paul maybe does not understand what plagiarism is, and that is an unexpected thing, but judge for yourself. Here is Senator Paul's response in its entirety.
Senator, as a journalist, I have to ask you this question. MSNBC accused you of plagiarism on Monday. They accused you of stealing four lines from Wikipedia for your speech at Liberty University. So is this true? I mean, what they're saying that you borrow lines from a Wikipedia entry about the movie Gattaca. So what happened?
Yeah, we did, and I let people know that we borrowed the plot lines from Gattaca to movie, and I gave credit to the people who wrote the movie. I also borrowed lines from Ray Bradbury and gave him credit as well. I think they're arguing about whether or not things are properly footnoted, and there are technicalities to this, but nothing I said was not given attribution to where it came from. I talked about a movie, Gattaca. It is a copyrighted movie by the screenwriters, and I gave every bit of credit to where that plot line came from. The rest of it's making a mountain out of a molehill from people, I think, basically who are political enemies and have an axe to grind.
Well, because it seems that it's not the first time. The website BuzzFeed, they say that you borrow several lines from Wikipedia again for a speech in June to a Latino organization.
Once again,
in this case, the movie Stand and Deliver.
And once again, it's a disagreement on how you footnote things. And I think people footnote things different in an academic paper than they do in a public speech. But if we were to present any of these speeches for publication that have footnotes in, but a lot of times the speech is, people don't take the time to footnote things. But I think it was very clear that the plot line was not something I created. I didn't claim that I created the movie Gattaca. See, that's what's absurd about this. The plot line from Gattaca belongs to one person, the guy, the screenwriter, and I gave him credit for that. So it's kind of ridiculous to sort of say, you know, you didn't do proper footnotes. It's making a mountain out of a molehill.
Do you write your own speeches, Senator? Or is someone else helping you with that?
A lot of people participate in writing the speeches, so they're not really attributable to one person. But the thing is that if you look at any of my speeches, there's never been any indication that I'm trying to take credit for someone else's work. So really, this is really about information and attacks coming from haters. Yeah, the person who's leading this attack, she's been spreading hate on me for about 3 years now, and I don't intend for it to go away, but I also don't see her as an objective news source.
Senator, you can call me whatever names you want to. Trust me, I have been called worse. But this is not a personal thing for me at all. I feel no emotion about this, and I do not hate you, nor have I ever tried to spread hate on you. And I'm sorry you feel that way. But also, you didn't borrow plot lines from these movies. You read the Wikipedia page out loud. The point is that you seem to have a frequent habit of plagiarizing parts of your speeches. And perhaps that is explained by the fact that you do not understand what plagiarism means. I mean, nobody's accusing you of pretending that you wrote Gattaca or that you wrote Stand and Deliver. That is not what this is about. This is not about you explaining a plot line. This is about you lifting other people's words verbatim and pretending that they are your own. This is about you lifting entire sections of a website, inserting them into your own speeches, and then passing them off as your own original thoughts. This is something that high school students know not to do. And you are presenting yourself as a potential candidate for president. It has nothing to do with me.
We're off the air then. All right. Now we're going to go back. All right.
So what you're saying is right. poor Rachel here getting the hate monger thing is, you know, these guys are often they do that deflect thing where they throw it off on somebody else. I'm glad that she put it right back on him. It's not about her. It's nothing about her. It's him and his words. He is presenting himself as a presidential candidate, and he's giving speeches. And then it turns out that these speeches were written by other people, or he's lifted whole sections from other people.
But not even just he tried to codify. He lifted the whole thing, but he lifted it out of Wikipedia. He didn't even go to the daggone the actual screenplay to
right.
see how it was said. He wrote the whole thing out of Wikipedia.
They literally just, you know, he Googled around and found stuff. And
are you saying that the people who listen to him are ignorant?
Of course they are. But here's the thing that gets me. You know, he knows what he's doing, and I'm not going to be nice like Rachel when she said that he didn't know what plagiarism was. He knows what it is. You know, he's a shrewd guy. He's shrewd enough to get way ahead in politics and become a force in politics in America. And he knows exactly what he's doing. And the proof of that is where now he's coming back saying, well, there's a difference in my academia footnoting and my speech making, and I've got it on a
what
paper
is it?
Somewhere.
Okay,
at home,
so
but I didn't note it in the speech.
All right, then that's fine. He can say it, but what is the difference between academia footnoting and what he's doing? What is the difference?
Well, what he's trying to make is that there's a difference. The difference is in academia you would have the exact – everything has to be – put out. You have to, you know, state exactly every single line. You have quotation marks around it. You have the source it's from, when it was published, who published it, when, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Granted, he doesn't have to say, you know, Houghton Mifflin, copyright 1953 or something after
mm-hmm.
he says that. But mm-hmm. anybody, just like you said, when you give a speech, you say, you know, as our great leader Abraham Lincoln once said, you know, or whatever, you don't just sit there and say four scores of it and pretend it's your words.
Right.
And he could simply have said anything about, you know, as they said in the movie Gattaca, or as, you know, this great author said, or as I read in a book, or I found the other night on the internet,
right.
and just said it, you know, and he could have gotten away with it. So the fact that he was trying to pass it off as his words is so disingenuous. It just shows you, though, the nature of their character. And they think, and this is what keeps catching them now, this information age where everybody can record and listen and research everything in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's catching them. Because used to, you know, they could get away with these things, and someone maybe, when it was written down way later, might have found, you know, that it was out of something else. But nowadays, you can just simply, you know, live stream it, find it, and go, oh, why, look there. There it is, verbatim, on the web, you know. So these guys are idiots if they think they can get away with it. But they are getting away with it, or have been for a long time, because they're preaching to idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they're just is pretty simplistic.
I have a we seem like we've been having a problem here with people calling into the show. I don't know why, but we're going to just call in so we can get on. Let me see how we do this. Hello? It must be Skype then. The reconnectedness, I don't know. Oh,
wow.
We got people calling in here. We got someone on the air.
Yes, this
Hello
is
there.
Wayne Goodwin. Yes, this
How
is Wayne
you,
Goodwin,
Wayne?
North Carolina Insurance Commissioner.
Wayne, were you having trouble calling in?
I was having a little bit of trouble. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine, because I got some calls from some other people saying they could not call in. They were getting a busy signal or something. So I don't know what was going on, but I am glad to have you. This man, Wayne Goodwin, has done more for North Carolina, for the people of North Carolina, than anybody in this state. I mean anybody. Wayne Goodwin, and I'm seriously, Wayne, I'm serious what I'm saying, because he has protected us in more ways, the people of North Carolina, than you can imagine. He's the first commissioner in 24 years. North Carolina was voted as voters, elected Wayne commissioner, in as the first new commissioner in 24 years, because the guy that was leading North Carolina in the years before Wayne, I guess he would you consider him your mentor, Wayne? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so. He was a good friend and like a father figure, so I'd say a mentor for many of us.
And that was Jim Long, who really
yes.
put the North Carolina people ahead of everything. And Wayne has ordered insurance cut rates and rate of freezes, he did rebates, refunds, and has saved North Carolinians more than $1.3 billion since 2008.
Actually, now up to $1.7 billion.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Well, hey, every one of those little bit of billions counts.
Yeah. Not just saving here and there, but you also, I saw on this page that Mike gave me, you've been one of the leaders in fighting fraud. I think that's, I'm very glad to hear that. I mean, that's one of the best contributions you could make.
Well, and I'll tell you, that's something that a lot of people don't realize, but like in the last 5 years, just during my watch, we've been able to arrest over 850 people for committing insurance fraud, and it can be somebody who's making a false insurance claim. It could be an insurance agent stealing money from you. It could be an insurance company stealing money from you or doing something else, or any other person who's breaking the law within the Department of Insurance jurisdiction. And from those 850 people we've arrested, most of them are now guests of the state, if you understand what that means. And we have been able to recover 55.
They must have nice accommodations if the state is paying for it.
Well, they have three meals a day and a cot, I think. But we have recovered $55 million from those people, and that $55 million has gone back to the victims of insurance fraud. So we're fighting fraud every day, and most people won't hear about it, but it ultimately it keeps your insurance premiums lower when you arrest people like this.
Well, you know, but one I wanted to ask you, Wayne, is do you also
fight the insurance fraud that is involved with health care?
Yes. Give you an example. There was a large business in the Triad area a couple years ago that it was providing health insurance, you know, through for its employees. But what was happening, the owner of the business or the CEO was not sending the employee premiums to the insurance company, so all the employees wound up not having coverage. So we went after that business for insurance fraud, and basically it caused people not to have their medical care covered, and we got it fixed. But we go after companies, we go after businesses that break the law, we go after individuals.
Well, what is the NCGA?
The North Carolina General Assembly. I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, that is an acronym that people in this state need to get very, very familiar with if they're not already familiar with them. Because I understand that they have prevented you in some ways of doing your job.
Yes. In fact, under the Affordable Care Act, it gave states the opportunity to control their own destiny regarding this new federal health insurance law. And I know everyone's been hearing about what's been happening in Washington about their website and all that, but the law gave states the opportunity to do their own thing and to set the rules and to create their own website and to have it be as transparent as possible. And North Carolina, through its General Assembly, the legislature, it's a new crowd that's there now these days. They decided that they were going to give up their authority and give it pretty much up to the federal government, even though they don't want the federal government telling them what to do. They said, well, we don't support this federal law, so you can have it and you do whatever you want with it. What's happened is that it keeps me from doing what I'm elected to do in any respects, and second, it is causing us North Carolinians to have less competition among health insurance carriers and in some respects even higher health insurance premiums governed exchange.
Well, you see, now the thing is that these exchange the health insurance plans you're referring to, health insurance plans that people buy individually, correct?
Right. The Affordable Care Act pertains to individual health insurance plans, and of course, group policies. People can still get group policies. The Affordable Care Act also provides incentives for employers to provide group health plans too. But most of the hiccups that we're hearing about from the federal government pertain to the individual plans.
Right, because no matter what the General Assembly wants to do, they can't affect a group policy plan. Am I right?
That for the most part, I mean, what is defined in the law as a group health plan is set by state and federal law. But the way the law is now is that persons who had individual policies that were not sufficient, the law provides some additional benefits and coverages so that there's at least a base minimum type of coverage so that the average person can say that they're not being denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition, that they can have diabetes covered, breast cancer covered, that they can have their children on until age 26, that there's no lifetime cap of $1 million,
right,
things
right,
like that.
Right. Well, but see, the thing is that what I'm saying is that I don't see how people didn't understand that they had junk insurance. How do people not understand it? When you go insurance, when you buy insurance, you want to buy insurance that's going to protect you from something that might occur. Nobody really thinks about, I'm going to be permanently injured. But it seems like that most of these cries we hear are from people who think they're going to be permanently injured and abort insurance that is not part of a group plan, and they're not getting they don't have the 26-year-olds on the plan that can stay. They don't have the maximum cap lifetime. They don't have seeing the doctor more than twice a year for free. They don't have mammograms. They don't have colonoscopies. They don't have any of these things. So why don't they understand that's junk if they don't have it?
Well, that's just part of the, you know, the learning curve, is that people need to know that none of us know what our futures are as it relates to our health. You know, as we all get older, we're going to have things happen to our bodies, and even as we are not older, we're going to have incidents and accidents and health conditions. So in all those things, when people are not sufficiently covered with insurance, they wind up having these catastrophic medical bills and hospital bills and are responsible for them, but they have no insurance, which ultimately means higher costs for everybody. It means bankruptcy for families. It means businesses going under. So by having greater financial responsibility and greater personal responsibility by having insurance, you can help lessen the likelihood you'll be bankrupted by medical bills. And it also means it keeps health insurance premiums a little bit flatter because more people are insured as opposed to just the people who are thinking ahead.
Right. Hey, Wayne, I have a question. It really bothered me what our legislature did, and not just because, you know, it's a policy difference and they decided, you know, not to go with the Affordable Care Act or whatever. But it's just, you know, instead of just setting up an alternative or doing anything and letting it roll, they actively barred it. And I've even heard campaigns on radio and whatnot against Obamacare, Sandy, North Carolina exchanges, you know, get them before you get burned by Obamacare and all this kind of stuff. I don't understand why they have such a vehement opposition to it. But do you get, because you're the front line here with your calls and stuff like this, is it having an erosion in just confidence of citizens in insurance, in medicine, and in governance? Because I can't see an upside to the constant, you know, derailment of any kind of system.
All right. Well, I have several different trains of thought running down the track at the same time as you were talking there. One is that I think that for many states and for many persons of a certain party, political party, it has been a stated goal of theirs to oppose and destroy anything related to the Affordable Care Act, even if it means pushing America off the fiscal cliff, you remember a few weeks ago.
Right.
And I think some of it is due to folks are afraid of change. I do that some of it is also due to race. There are some members who are opposing these changes that it's because they do not like President Obama being the who he is. But then there are also others who have philosophical reasons who don't want the federal government entering into this. And I will say that there are some legitimate concerns about state versus federal. I think the state is the better route for having accountable, controlled, responsible insurance regulation, but North Carolina decided to default to the Fed.
But that depends on who's running the state.
Well, that's a good point too, and that was what that goes to another point that y'all raised a moment ago. If the law in place meant that 500,000 people would get health insurance coverage through Medicaid that currently don't have any coverage, and if the law that's in place now would mean that more people would have coverage and at lower cost than before, to me it would mean that it's good government and just being a progressive society to say, okay, we want people insured. We want to do these things that protect the lives of our citizenry. But to my shock, the legislature decided that they would rather be part of this national conspiracy to defeat the law. Now I will say the federal government messed up in that their website isn't working, but I think part of that is that they weren't prepared for federal government. They were planning for maybe 15 states or so, that's part of the problem.
I think that was their last card they had to play. They said, if we can't stop them, we'll get so many states on these exchanges that it will flood them. And listen, as far as I'm concerned, this is all nonsense. If we spent over $450 billion since 1980 on the YF-22 and the F-35 aircraft that will not fly, and the government has now given up on them, and you haven't heard a peep out of nobody. So why are we talking about something that's supposed to help people get insurance, and we spent maybe $100 million or $300 million? Why are we making such a big fuss of this?
I think it's all politics for the most part. And, remember, some of these proposals that are in the law are things that the Heritage Foundation and that former Senator Bob Dole and other members of the Republican, they supported it back in the 90s.
90%. They supported the exchanges.
Right.
He took 90% of what the Heritage Foundation wanted.
Thing, right? This is what boggles my mind most about this. Even if you don't like it or whatever, it's still business. And the exchanges, was the compromise.
Right.
So this stuff was the compromise.
This is Paul Ryan's plan.
Yeah, this is to make all businesses, there's more business, there's more exchange, there's more competition. That's the whole dream of capitalism, right? And I don't understand why they are denying this. And the fact that, they gave up $27 million just in this state alone that was going to go toward those exchanges to make everything work. That's just money in companies' pockets.
And that's part of the big lie that is being told, is that folks are saying, well, this is government insurance. No, this is
it's not.
The best thing probably that private health insurance carriers have wanted is requiring people to have insurance. So it's a very capitalistic proposal to have all these private companies having a required pool of policyholders. So I think it's politics. It is politics. They want to oppose anything that President Obama has put forward, even if they supported it in previous years.
So being an insurance commissioner, from the flip side of it, not the citizen side, but from the business side, are you hearing frustration and anger from all these people who have just been cut out of an entire North Carolina industry? I mean, overnight, they could have been running North Carolina exchanges and setting up, 50 new shops and stuff across the state, but instead they're blocked.
Yeah, I have heard some very irate members of the Chamber of Commerce around the state. There are doctors that are angry. There are hospitals that are on the verge of closing because of the Medicaid expansion not occurring. And you've got insurance companies that are concerned. They'd rather deal with the state than deal with the federal government. And that's one reason why that you only have two health insurance companies on the federal exchange in North Carolina, is companies would rather work with a state exchange. We probably would have had at least, I would guess, 4, 5, 6, 7 carriers to choose from instead of one or two if we had a state exchange. But right now we don't have that.
Okay, let me ask you one other question on this, and that is the insurance companies that would be promoting and are not promoting now their insurance companies. I think this whole thing that this regressive party has done was make it very obvious in 10 years we will have a single-payer plan. I think they forced it. They have gone so far over to the other side that they have now forced us to say, you know what? We don't need all this. We need a single payer.
Yeah. Well, it's that I've heard that argument, and that was proposed years ago too, but because of the intransigence of the folks in Washington and even in state capitals, particularly the red states, many of the red states, they might have pushed the country closer to being a single payer than they would normally have would have seen. So I don't know. That's certainly a potential outcome, but it's still early. We got to see what happens with the current law, but it certainly, I think, has made it a greater possibility.
We've blown 20 years. I mean, this was originally, back in the 80s or more that they proposed. No, I'm just talking about with this identical proposal.
Oh.
So they've blown 20 years of profits and exchanges and marketplace growth that they could have had. I don't get it. I mean, I don't get it. Even from their point of view, I don't get it because economically they're just crippling themselves.
One other thing I'd like to ask you about, the insurance premium rates for car insurance. How does North Carolina compare to other states?
Well, I'll tell you, and I'm glad you asked about that. I've only got a couple minutes before I have to go, but I tell you, I'm so glad you asked about it because North Carolina, we're the best thing going. We got the lowest average car insurance premiums in the South from Delaware to Texas. That's Big South, the lowest in the South. Oh. And we have, depending upon the measurement, we either are the third lowest or the sixth lowest in the whole country. And anybody who's wanting to shop around can find the company of their choice here. In addition to that, we have a highly competitive market for car insurance. At least 166 individual car insurance companies here, and some of the car insurance companies are trying to change our system because they want us to pay more. But all of my actuaries and even some of the other insurance companies say that our system is not broken. But anybody who tries to dramatically change it is going to try to make all of us pay more, and that's not acceptable in my watch.
Well, now, when are you up for re-election?
I'm not back up until 2016, but as you and I talked before, I treat every day and every year as an election year for me because of the impact I have on pocketbooks and businesses and the direction of the state. But I was elected first in 2008, was re-elected last year, 2012, but I'll be back fighting for North Carolina every day.
Well, how can they get on the website or call you if people want to know what is going on, if they got a question, they got a problem with an insurance company? Because to put a button in what we were talking about insurance today, I paid my youngest daughter's insurance, and she's 30 years old, 31 years old. I pay her insurance. I got back August 1st. A $99.96 check from her insurance company because they did not spend 80% of her premiums on her. So
right.
When
well,
the
that's,
people
are
lying,
that's also
say
part of
that insurance doesn't come back. It does.
Well, that's also, talking about health insurance law, that's also part of what's required there, requires an insurance company who's covering you for health insurance to spend at least 80% of the monies on your care. And if they don't do that, then they have to refund the difference. But the way to get in touch with me and to learn about what my department is doing for North Carolina and the region, there's several things. One, first of all, the official public website, I'm going to give you that one first, is ncdoi.com, ncdoi.com. And you can find out everything. We got press releases every day. We tell about what each section of the department does and how you can make a complaint about insurance fraud or if you have a question about your policies and how it can save you money. That's the first thing. The second, if you want to learn about what I do individually for the state beyond what's on the state website, you can go to waynegoodwin.org. That's waynegoodwin.org. And, of course, you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. That's Wayne Goodwin NC, @WayneGoodwinNC. If you'll go there, you keep up with all that's happening. And I welcome your questions. Please email.
Okay.
Please let me know.
The native of Hamlet, North Carolina, graduate of Chapel Hill, and say hello to Melanie, Madison, and Jack.
I will do that shortly. And I thank you for having me on. I've got to head on back and pick up the kids. And I hope all of your listeners have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And thank you for having me on today.
Hey, as always, thank you, Commissioner.
And thanks for fighting the good fight.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for helping me fight that fight.
No problem. That's our fighting commissioner in North Carolina, Wade Goodwin. And you can get his information I hope you all had pencils and wrote it down. But we will put that on our new website that will be up next week. And let's see. Next, we had a problem with our website. I don't know what was going on. Skype.
Blame Obama.
Obama did it. That's right. Obama did it. Skype was down, although it said when I called back into Skype, it said that you were calling back into a show that was already on the air, but I got a call from Robbie Wells, and he said that it wasn't up. So I have no idea. I don't know where Robbie is now.
We could be back. Who knows?
No, we are back up. I'm looking at it right now. I'm keeping track right now.
All right.
So, hey.
Sounds good, though. But see, do you see how this is what bothers me most about these big-headed Republicans, is that it's not just some kind of, you know, political ideology.
Right.
That they're fucking. But they do things that even hurt themselves. They just hurt. They just crippled a whole industry in this entire state, and they've done it, you know, in 25 other states.
You know, they
refuse to let a law go into effect and have exchanges, and then they even didn't do their own version and just allow competition to flourish and allow their companies to go and do things.
Well, people didn't hear, let's play this clip one more time from Batman.
With respect, Master Wayne, perhaps this is a man you don't fully understand either. A long time ago, I was in Burma and my friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
What's the question?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
And that's what we're dealing with. You know, the problem is, how do you deal with someone who just wants the world to burn, or your country to burn, or your county to burn, or your city to burn?
And, you know, good example of that right here, you had this little report on the GOP plan for health care, you know, this thing
right
here, and it was pointing out how many different GOP candidates, and this particular one has to be about Mitch McConnell, but over and over and over, as they foam at the mouth trying to stop Obamacare, repeal Obamacare, defund Obamacare, all this stuff, they've been asked, well, then what's your plan? What's
right
the alternative?
What is the plan?
Three different times, in complete lack of answer. And he said, well, we just need to repeal that first. Then we'll work on something. I mean, they have no plan.
It's just like going into a war. And they say, okay, you know, the first thing they say when you go into a war, with the plan you're going with, after the first shot is fired, your plan changes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so the plan has changed. What are they going to do?
Right.
Yes, okay, let's get rid of Obamacare. Let's get rid of the ACH. What are you going to do? Are you going to wait? You're not just because it's not that important. You don't have to do it right away. Well, we can see that's their reasoning, because they haven't done it right away. No, they haven't done it. It is not possible. They have been the Democratic Party has been trying to get health care pushed through since Roosevelt. Since Roosevelt.
And let's repeat this obvious comment. The Democratic Party has tried for 70 years to get this passed. Why wasn't it passed? Because of an opposition party to it called the Republicans.
You can't
say, though, that they've got an alternative. They've had decades.
Absolutely.
Now, let me be cruel and mean completely. Oh. If you want an alternative, the alternative is actually the
Single Payer
Act.
Right.
No, that's what they did in their state under Mr. Romney. And that was their own plan that we compromised in just to get something on the books.
But it's Paul Ryan's plan.
It's their plan to begin with.
Besides,
but they're still pushing.
Ain't Obama's plan.
That's why.
He plagiarized their plan.
No, but that's why we should just go ahead and not compromise and go for a single payer that we wanted all along.
Well, the thing is that Barack Obama plagiarized the Republican plan.
Sure
he did.
He compromised.
He plagiarized it because he knew he wouldn't get single payer through. He's calling the ACA, they're calling it Obamacare, but they don't care he plagiarized it. They don't care. That's not. We got a call. Let's see what this caller is here. Hello, caller.
Hello, Michael. This is Robbie Wells.
Robbie Wells. You know, I don't know what was going on, Robbie, because we were talking on the air, and it said live up here. It must have been Skype, which we're calling in on, that went down, and I didn't notice it. But because we were supposed to get two other calls before you called in. Robbie Wells. Does everybody know who you are, Robbie Wells? I don't think so. So I want you to introduce yourself to this audience.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for having me on this afternoon. My name is Robbie Wells. I'm running for President of the United States in 2016 and seeking the Democratic Party nomination. And I live right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm a small business owner. Most of my career was coaching college football. I've served in the Army National Guard. And I'm a member of Elevation Church right here in Charlotte. And I'm taking a stand for the people of this country, and I'm asking everybody in this country to rise up with me come 2016.
The way is to freedom, strength, security, and prosperity. That's what you say.
Absolutely.
That's what you say. Absolutely. And before we go in a little further, listen. I looked at the video last night, saw your mama, and I want to tell you, if it wasn't enough to make me cry, I don't know what would.
Well, yeah, you know, my mom is my biggest supporter, and she's down in South Carolina, the Lowcountry, towards Charleston.
She's in Charleston?
Yeah, she's right outside of Charleston in a very small town there, one of the small towns called Greeleyville, South Carolina, and she's one of my biggest supporters. She gets out and she goes campaigning for me down there in South Carolina. It's a really neat deal.
Greeleyville. Okay, my wife's family is from Adams Run.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's all right down in that area, you know, Williamsburg County, which, of course, is the largest landmass county east of the Mississippi River. And that's, of course, where Greeleyville, Hemingway, King Street, all of those towns right down there in that part of the country. That's my old stomping grounds.
Okay, because that's where my wife's family is, and I love it down here. We got married down here in Adams Run.
Yes, it's a really neat area down there, and there's a lot of great people down there. I call them the salt of the earth because they're just, you know, just really good down-home people down there in that part of the country.
Well, you know, I was looking at that video, and I want to tell you, at first I said, who is she talking about? I haven't met that person. Then I said, oh, yeah, no, I knew. But I tell you, it was like after everything was through with the Halloween era and everything, that I was looking at, I wasn't going to look at it tonight because I was so tired, But I said, I mean, I sat and watched that whole thing, and I want to tell you, it is very, it's fabulous. Fabulous. But your
well,
mother
thank you.
Steals the show.
Yeah, we've got a great film crew that works with us. They're out of Rochester, New York, and I thought they did an outstanding job with that documentary. And of course, in that documentary, you've got a lot of my campaign staff. You of course
hey,
have
listen,
my mom.
Forget them. Forget them. No. That you didn't need any of them but your mother. Forget them. They were all ancillary to everything that was said. The football players. Baloney, didn't mean none of them. Your mother was the show. Didn't need your picture, didn't need your face, didn't need anybody's face, but your mother, when she told the story about your adoption, I mean, I think it was amazing. And then your explanation about...
Well, Michael, I appreciate that. You know, I am adopted, and a few reporters have actually seen that documentary, and one of them has said, you know, you could end up being America's adopted son if you end up winning the White House. I said, well, I intend on winning the White House, so I guess that's what I'm going to be.
Well, I want to take that video. I have a new website that should be up and running. I'm hoping by the end of next week it's going to be an interactive website where you can call in, leave messages, everything else. It's going to shoot the website head down all the hell. It's going to be fabulous. And I want your permission to take that and put that on my website.
Oh, please do. In fact, anybody else that you know that has one of these radio shows or they've got websites that they want to use that, they're more than welcome to. You know, the whole purpose of me running 4 years out is to become a household name. And the only way that
right.
we're going to do that is with people like yourself taking that video and our platform and, of course, the economic plan that we have and putting it out there where everybody can see it.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of things. No, still a lot of things. I shouldn't say a lot of things. No, there are a few things that I'm not really on board with how you want to look for. But, you see, we are not
equal opportunity.
Looking for nobody to do what I want but me. So, you know. If I'm looking for someone else to do what I how my vision is, I gotta elect me. So we have to get around that and look at, you know, how much of what that person says is me is how we need to look at it.
Well, I agree with you, Michael. Because here's the thing, as long as we can agree that sometimes we're going to disagree, we'll never
yes.
agree on everything. And if we did agree on everything, Michael, I would be suspect of you and say, well, he's just a robot.
Yeah.
Absolutely, without a doubt. But so tell us something about
current atmosphere here in America with this economic catastrophe and showdown between the two parties. Well, what's he going to do to break the logjam?
Well,
and shake things up.
And this is what you go into a very interesting question. I was going to ask him, what the heck is Eaglenomics?
That's a very good question. You know, I really do appreciate you asking that question. From both of you, what's going to break this logjam? I truly believe it is going to be Eaglenomics, which is my economic plan. Eaglenomics takes the best from the left and the best from the right. And I'm going to let all your listeners get on my website, which is www.robbiewells2016.com, and they can actually look at Eaglenomics. You can click right on it, and you can see that it is. It's the best of the left and the best of the right, because what we've had is either the left wing or the right wing agenda, and I've never seen a bird fly very well with only one wing. In fact, if he's only got one good wing, all he's going to do is just flutter around on the ground and just kick up a bunch of dust. So we've got to start working with both wings and working together. And you talk about the deadlock in Congress. I truly believe that Eaglenomics is a plan that, that we're going to take to Washington to implement that's going to actually jumpstart this economy. And the big thing we've got to do is we've got to bring these manufacturing jobs back. We've got to get people back to work. You know, we've lost 4.5 million jobs in the past 15 years strictly because all of these manufacturing jobs have left and they've gone elsewhere. So we've got to bring them back. This plan, Eaglenomics, will do that. How? By driving down manufacturing costs and blocking a good portion of the sale of imports that are coming here. By doing that, that's going to force these manufacturing jobs to come back here, and it's going to put a lot of Americans back to work, which is what we've got to do anyway.
Okay, but I understand that, and I think you're correct, but the problem is half the or three-quarters of these manufacturing jobs we don't do anymore in this country.
Well, and that's my whole point. We've got to bring them back. And that's what this will do.
To do them. What I'm trying to say is we don't need to do that anymore because we have other means of doing the same thing.
Okay, well, I follow where you're coming from. My only thing is this. You know, we have become a consumption-based nation where all we do is consume, and we buy. Well, if that's all you're doing is consuming and buying, you're going to go bankrupt, or you're going to go way into debt, which is what we are right now at almost $17 trillion in debt. We've got to get back to producing, and we've got to get back to selling. My plan will do just that by bringing these manufacturing jobs back, by bringing back or by becoming energy independent. You're talking about 7.5-8 million jobs right off the top right there.
So here's a question for you, Robbie, about the bringing things back. The reason that they left wasn't because magically we didn't need clothing, we didn't need to manufacture, you know, anything anymore in America. It's that
right.
They changed the dynamics of the economic field, and they exported all of that because they allowed companies to go overseas and exploit cheap labor markets. And
that's correct.
Then they could build and manufacture things so cheap over there that they could, you know, literally build it across the world, ship it across the world, and then still sell it for a massive profit here just because the actual production costs were so cheap over there. So if
right.
we just reverse the process, though, how do you bring everything back without raising the cost? Because that was the supposed excuse of businesses, is the why they couldn't do business in America is because labor costs are too high.
Well, with
that?
a revenue neutral value-added tax, that's how we're going to do it. And you don't do it overnight. You have to ramp it up over a period of time. But in other words, okay, if we put a revenue neutral tax, a value-added tax on all the goods, whether they be imports or whether they be domestic, whatever the case may be, what it's going to do, it will drive down your manufacturing costs because now the companies that are here, they're going to have to start competing with each other, so their price will go down. That's why it would actually be revenue neutral. But at the same time, these imports, the price of the imports is going to start to go up, which is what we've got to do. We've got to raise the price of these imports so that we can actually entice these companies to come back to America.
Okay,
obvious point. If you raise the price of everything so that, you know, you're making it, the incentive is equal everywhere, so no matter where you manufacture, you know, the price is going to be the same. But if you raise the price on everything here in America, how do you propose to not bankrupt the consumers? Because they can't afford.
Here's what will happen, okay? If you raise the price on domestic goods, okay, over a period of time, what happens is as those prices go up with the actual price of the good goes down, basically on the same amount, so then the price actually stays the same on the domestic products. The only price that actually would go up is on the foreign goods that are coming in here as an import.
Okay, so
we want the price of the foreign goods coming in here to go up. That's what's going to entice all these jobs to come back or these companies to come back here.
But what do you consider a value average tax?
What do I consider a value-added tax?
I mean, because the regressive party was pushing this. Who was the one that was pushing this this tax on goods over X amount of dollars? And
that would
make people who were medium income people never able to buy anything that's over a certain amount, because they wouldn't have, it'd been out of their wallet field.
Well, again, what I'm saying is it's revenue neutral. Listen to the term, revenue neutral.
Okay.
As the tax goes in, the price of that good would actually go down, so it stays the same.
On the
product.
All right. So what you're saying is that the manufacturer would have to come back here and start building. He can't use the same plants anymore because that's 20 years ago. So
we sold them all
overseas. So are we now going to give these manufacturers tax credits for the next 100 years so they can build their manufacturing plants here?
Well, we've got to. We've got to give them incentive to come back. That's correct.
Okay. We give them an incentive to come back, but how long do you give them incentive for? Because it's just like these research and development pharmaceutical companies. They've been doing research and development on Excedrin for 100 years, and they're still getting research and development money. I mean,
right,
how long do you give Acura, this is tax-free until next month? I mean, we need to have the same for everybody, though. But these manufacturing companies are going to say, oh, no, my company is more important, so therefore you got to give me a longer time for tax credits.
Well, and I understand where you're coming from. What I will say is this. I believe that each and every one of us as citizens are important, you know, whether it's a big company or whether it's some small little business. All of it is made up with people. And each and every one of the people in this country have been hurting, so we've got to get these people back to work now, Michael. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is we've got to get them back to work. We've got to become energy independent. Here's the thing, too, about being energy independent, Michael. Say again, I'm
you're
sorry.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
We've got 25% of our oil supply every year coming from the Middle East.
Yes.
But yet my plan calls for becoming at least 25% oil independent within my first 3.5 years of being president, so we can cut off our bad business that we're doing with these countries over in the Middle East that harbor terrorists and terrorist activity.
How is that done in the first 3 years? Well, we couldn't get Obamacare through in the first 3 years.
And I understand where you're coming from. I'm just telling you, this is my plan, and this is my goal. Now, I have spoken with CEOs of oil companies here in America. I have spoken with their engineers. I've spoken with experts in the field of energy. And I have been assured that we can do that if we can just unleash them and let them go.
Okay. Now, see, and that's one of the main things these companies – which I have a problem with, because if they could, they would tax us on the air we breathe. So the thing is that their sole purpose is to make money. So I never can give them the benefit of the doubt. I would never do that. They need to be tightly controlled. Now the thing is that they haven't gotten into the energy field with the water or hydrogen, anything like that, because they couldn't figure out how to tax it yet. I mean, they couldn't figure out how to get it tax-free yet. So I have a problem. You know, you'll be just like Obama. You'll get in there, and if you have the same house, you will never get it through. You'll get nothing through.
It's shame what's been going on in the House of Representatives, too, now, Michael.
What's that? Go ahead.
Said it's really a shame what's been going on in the House of Representatives. I mean, they forced a shutdown of the American government. And here's the thing that I was calling for, that if the House of Representatives and really just Congress in general, if they could not come together and start working things out, get the government back going, we almost defaulted. I knew that in the 11th hour they were going to come through. But in the event that they haven't, they hadn't, I believe that the constituents across this country should have started the recall process.
Well, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. But you see, a lot of states don't have that ability because they thought of that a long time ago. So they took it out. You can't recall. The problem is, I don't think you can recall a congressman or a senator. I don't think that's fine. I think the only way they can be cut out is if they had a some sort of – they have to be impeached, first of all. I think that's the only way to get them out.
Yeah.
Only
well, what about one from Colorado? Wasn't it Colorado that were recalled because they changed their stance on the Second Amendment? Isn't that correct?
Yeah, but that's
right.
The state. But that was state. That wasn't federal. That was state.
Right.
That wasn't federal.
That's correct.
So, you know, I don't think you can recall a federal employee,
yeah,
a senator or House member. So,
right.
And I'm just worried about this, Robbie, because so many of the things you are saying is absolutely true. And if you became president, you'd be in the same position as Barack Obama if we didn't change this House.
Well, and the one thing that I do appreciate lately you've seen with Barack Obama, he's been using the bully pulpit, which is what you've got to do. You've got to use that bully pulpit. And I'll tell you this, too. I will challenge Congress when I get there. I'm going to challenge them, number one, to put forward a balanced budget, and then number two, to pay the bills. That's two things they're supposed to do. And if they don't, they need to give up their salary. Now, that's not a law in place, but they should want to give up their salary because they're not doing their job.
Really? Oh, really?
Hey, these guys paid themselves.
Hey, give me a break. Hey, you're already putting painting a target on your back. I hope they didn't hear that. never going to get.
You know what? Let me tell you something. As an old football coach, I've got thick skin and a backbone. I hope they did hear it. Tell them to bring it.
Well, look. Okay, this all aside. Let me completely go back to what you were saying a minute ago about trade. Because this is talking about targets. This is going to put a target on the United States of America. When you go in and you reverse the last, ever since Reagan went in and they started this trend of outsourcing, you reverse that entire process and bring all the jobs and all the companies back to America, you're going to make a lot of economies hurt and hence a lot of countries mad because they've been making bank on our buck. Now, what are you going to do about that trade war that's going to erupt?
Yeah, it will
be a trade war when you reverse.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I've had the chance to meet with the Prime Minister and First Lady of Belize. I've had the opportunity to meet with the ambassador from the Philippines to the United States, and we've actually had the chance to talk about our economy and what we've got to do and my philosophy of how to do that. And they've said, well, you know, that may hurt some of these countries that you deal with. I said, you know what, here's the thing. Everybody relies on the United States around the world. And if we don't start taking care of our own backyard right here in the United States, then there's not going to be any more economy for us to help them with, okay? There's not going to be any more money, But we've got to make sure that we've got a strong economy before we take care of anybody else or we're going to lose it all.
Well, yeah, and what you're saying is you got to be a moron not to think you're not correct. The problem is these economies around the world are just like these Tea Party morons. They don't care about the future. All they care about is right now. What are we doing right now? They don't care about, you know what, if the United States was stronger, that would help us. Listen, come on. Are you kidding me? India? Wait, Bangladesh? China? Where we're getting all our soap from and all our clothes and all our cheap electronic stuff? You think they wouldn't go ballistic in 5 minutes? Oh, they go ballistic in 2.5 minutes. I mean, yeah, but you're absolutely correct. I mean, how are we giving away all the, you know, we're developing it here, we're sending it over there to be put together, to be manufactured, and then sent back here. Now, all that used to be done here.
I completely agree, and that's what we've got to do. We've got to get these people back to work in this country. We've got over 20 million Americans, Michael, that do not have a job right now. Now, If you look at the national report, it's going to say less than that. That's because a lot of people have given up hope, and they're no longer on the list. We've got another 25 million that are underemployed. We've got 46 million Americans living in poverty in the United States. Yes. So we've got to look at what's been going on and what got us to this point and say, you know what? If we keep on doing what we're doing, we're going to keep on getting what we're getting. It's time for us to go in a different direction. It's time for us to think outside the box. Here we go.
Let me ask you this now. We have spent over close to $450 billion developing the YF-22 and the F-35 aircraft, which we are now going to stop manufacturing.
Because they can't fly.
Because they can't fly,
and they've known it forever, but yet they've still put all this money in it. It makes absolutely no sense.
Then why are we yelling about Obamacare that will help people when they've only spent maybe $100-200 million?
Well, here's the thing. You know, you've got the Republicans that are yelling, and I think that they're just yelling because they just want to have something to fight about. Now here's what I'm going to tell you right now. Whenever I've seen a problem, it's not that I want to throw it out, but if there's something that needs to be tweaked or worked on, yeah, let's just go work on it. I want to see everyone in this country have health care. I really do. Because if you don't have health care and you have a catastrophic injury, or let's say that you got cancer or whatever, you would absolutely go bankrupt, and it would wipe you out. So, I believe that everybody in this country deserves that. I believe that's part of the pursuit of happiness.
Well, but the Republicans, the Regressive Party, is saying that does not happen. People don't lose everything because of health insurance inadequacies. So, I mean, how do you get around? How do you address that problem when they're saying it's all right for Lockheed to spend $480 billion of our money, but we don't ask that money back from Lockheed when they don't deliver?
Yeah, and it's a major problem, Michael. But you know, we've got to make sure that we are streamlining as a government. I'm going to tell you this too. One thing that I think we've got to do a better job of is making sure that we keep our military on the cutting edge. That doesn't mean that we need them all over the world. I mean, there's spots in the world that we're going to have them much longer than other places, but. But it does mean that we've got to be on the cutting edge when it comes to the military, and we've got to stay Army strong all the time, train troops here.
Rock,
go ahead.
Can I answer my question? What do we do about the YF-22 and the F-35 aircraft? Why can't we get the money back from Lockheed?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm sure there's a bunch of loopholes, and there's a lot of red tape there as to why we can't. But we should be able to because those planes can't fly.
They did not deliver. If I order a car and this car doesn't drive down the road, it goes down sideways, why do I have to pay for this car?
Well, you don't. Under the law, you should be able to take that car back, and it should be the same thing. It's the same principle. I completely agree with you, Michael.
And the other thing is that if it took 40 years to develop these two aircraft, why can't we give Obamacare 10 minutes? I mean, I understand it.
Well, and here's the thing. Obamacare is getting its time right now. Now the Republicans, they've tried to fight and they've tried to put everything. All it is Washington theatrics. Number one,
yeah.
The Affordable Care Act passed through both houses. It was signed into law. And it was upheld by the Supreme Court. It's a law. Now what we've got to do with this law is fix a few things that aren't working properly, but it doesn't mean that you throw it out.
But see, that's not really true, because there is nothing wrong with the Affordable Care Act. It's the implementation of the Affordable Care Act that we're in the process of having this problem with. I mean, there's nothing with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it gives everybody lifetime, doesn't give everybody lifetime caps. You can stay under 26 years of age. You can go see the doctor more than twice a year without any
No pre-existing conditions can keep you from keeping it as well. So, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. It's how it's been implemented because it costs, There's what? We got 500 different insurance companies involved with their computers don't talk the same language?
I mean,
we're talking about a massive undertaking here, and more massive than the YF-22 and the F-35. More massive.
That is
people
correct.
Say,
all they had to do was build a plane.
All they had to do was build a plane. They built planes before. I mean, I flew in the F-4. I mean, I flew in them. So I know they work. But the problem is they're having problems because what they want them to do, it can't be done. That's not the same thing as healthcare, which has never been done before on this massive scale.
And Michael, you are absolutely correct. Hey, listen, guys, I would love to stay on the phone all night with you guys.
We would love to
have
you on tonight. But we need to have you on again, and I need to call Cassie, right? Is that who you want me to call?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. And I look speaking to you again the week before. This is the week before Thanksgiving.
That'll be great.
Like
and to everybody that's listening out there right now, if you will, please just go on our campaign website, which is robbiewells2016.com, and you can check out our economic plan, which is called Eaglenomics. Also, we've got a campaign store that's up right now. There's over 600 pieces of merchandise that you can actually go on our store and order that right now, and it's got our campaign logo and whatnot all on that. So we're pretty excited about that campaign store and what it's going to actually help us do and give us a boost as far as fundraising is concerned. And we've got a lot of neat things. I'm going to be in Concord this Saturday, tomorrow, at the Filipino-American Gala for the states of North Carolina and South Carolina. Then on the 18th, I'll be down in Columbia, South Carolina, campaigning at the USC-Florida football game. I've been invited down there. Then on Thanksgiving weekend, we'll be over in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'll be speaking to the troops and to the veterans. And then middle December, at the one-year anniversary, and I hate to call it an anniversary, but it was a year ago that the tragic events occurred at Sandy Hook Elementary School. I'll actually be in Newtown, Connecticut, and I'll be speaking at a town hall meeting about my plan, Vets for Kids, which will do away with all this gun violence and at the same time put all these veterans back to work. So we've got a lot of neat things going on, and for everybody that's listening in right now, may God bless each and every one of you, Michael, you and everybody there in the studio.
Say hello to Mama.
Oh, yeah, man, absolutely. I will tell Mom hello for you. Mom Wells is excited about this campaign, and we look forward to seeing everybody real soon.
Okay. I thank you, candidate for president of these United States, Mr. Robbie Wells. And you didn't tell us the name of the company that you own here in Charlotte.
Say again?
You didn't tell us the name of your company you own in Charlotte.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my marketing delivery company is Foodex LLC, and we've got several restaurants that we work with. I've been able to employ a lot of people, about 11 people right now that are actually working with this, and a lot of them are college students, and several of them are actually putting their way through school. We've got a few retirees that work with us as well. So, yeah, we get really busy on the weekends, that's for sure.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Candidate for President Robbie Wells, and we will be looking forward to seeing you. Hey, maybe we can run into you down in Charleston when I'm down there. I might be down there probably in the next couple of weeks.
That'd be great. Hey, guys.
Okay.
God bless. Soon.
Bye. Robbie Wells, that's who it is. We have another caller coming in right now. And hello, caller. Who's this?
This is Lady Tamika.
How are you, Lady Tamika?
I am well. I miss you. It's been weeks, man. I haven't been on the line with y'all.
Well,
I haven't spoken to y'all in a minute.
I was in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Oh, how was the trip?
Oh man, fabulous. 9 days.
I
want to
be like you when I grow up.
Please, I want to be like me when I grow up. It was fabulous. Didn't want to come back. Tequila every day. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Oh, man, and fish, plenty of fresh fish and shrimp. Oh, give me a break. And the water, the ocean was, because we're on the Pacific side, was so warm. Oh, you didn't have to
get
up at your feet. You walk right out in it. That's how warm it was. Well,
yes.
Of course, it was 90.
That sounds awesome.
It was fabulous. I want to tell you. Yeah, I bought some sandals down. They were really fabulous. And I bought tequila back. And I'm having some right now. I just finished that. Anyway, but what can you tell us that will give us some inspiration that we can lead? And I had some inspiration. I was scaring my grandkids half to death. My costume. I'm going to have a new website coming up next week, and we're going to be posting all that along with Robbie Wells' video. And what can you tell us leading into this weekend?
Oh, man, that God is amazing. God is always doing great things, and sometimes we don't understand how things are working out for our greatest and our highest good, and we just need to trust the process. Trust the process of what God is doing. And I've been watching God work in what they call mysterious ways to kind of manifest some things that that you prayed for and may have forgotten. And just had a interesting week and realized that what we pray for, sometimes we forget, but God never forgets, and God always answers our prayers. So I'm very grateful for that. And it's always a divine time.
You're absolutely correct on that. You never know when it's going to happen.
Yes.
What you asked for. And just
absolutely.
Remember when it happens. Remember, that's what you asked for.
Yeah.
So a lot of people should know that you don't want to ask for anything that you really don't want.
You really should.
It could come true.
True.
There you are. You know, I wish I was a millionaire, and then you're a millionaire. It's just like I saw that was something related to a Twilight Zone. The guy wanted to have all the money in the world, and every time he turned around, there was another handout.
Yep.
So he just said, I don't want this anymore. He gave it all away. He said he found out he was more happy without the money than he was with it.
Or the one that just wanted left alone to read books. And
right.
He ended up in Last Man on Earth.
Right.
And what he did,
his glasses broke.
His glasses fell and broke.
His glasses fell and broke. So you need to be prepared for what you ask for. Is that what you're trying to say, Lady Tamika?
I'm saying that, but also remember that just because you forget, God doesn't forget, and God always answers your prayers.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's right.
We forget. Sometimes we forget, and then it happens, it comes upon us, and we go, now where did this come from? You asked for it. God didn't forget,
that's
you did.
That's right. It comes upon us at the time when we least expect it.
Yes.
And matter of fact, we said, "Oh, that ain't gonna happen. Let me do something else."
Yeah.
And there it happened.
And that's what
happens.
Happened. Yep.
Like Obamacare.
Like Obamacare. I want you to obstruct and defy.
Right.
It
keeps coming back like a penny. Anyway, before we go, I want to know, so how was your week since I last spoke to you? Your 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Well, it's been a major transition. I actually ended and took a hiatus off of WGIV for a little bit so that I can transition and watching how God opened up so many other doors. So I'm excited about that. Just need to, you go with the flow. Sometimes you just need to go with the flow. And so that's where that. You never know, you know, what God is going to answer at the time that God answers. You just need to know that God still answers prayer. So I'm grateful for that.
Very good, very good. And how's the kids?
The kids are wonderful. My son just got accepted into Socrates Academy with my other girls, so that's amazing. I have three of them going to the same school. They were going all over to different places. So I'm thankful for that. But, you know, just on that point right there, you asked me about my kids, which is very interesting. And I want to encourage your listeners to always be an advocate for your children and not allow people to speak things about your children that are not true. And this week I had a conference with one of the counselors and the teachers about my son and my youngest son. And I said to them, I can see if this was something that was a part of history. You ladies just met him for a couple of months, and I said, this is not him. And so they were looking at me kind of strange, and I told them, I said, I have over 19 years of experience in human services. I've worked with children and their families. You wrote me a report like it was an intervention for some kind of mental health or something. I said, this is school. And I said, you know, so we talked about that stuff, but they were not expecting me to be the advocate for my son, and it's only because I know my son. And yeah. I wasn't going to allow people to speak words about him that weren't true. And I said, let's deal with whatever the behavior is, but not put that on him as that is his character and who he is.
Right. It's just might be just a change of the season, because I know my wrist don't hurt until it starts getting cold. So
yeah.
You know, it's all and listen, the kids change the older they get,
yeah.
And they keep changing.
Well, see, that's why I like science. My excuse for everything happens with kids. Hormones.
Yeah, almost.
Just roll with it.
It's a hormone. Yes, yes.
Tomorrow,
as she said in Gone to Win, tomorrow is another day.
It is.
So I want to thank you, Lady Tamika, for coming on, and I want to make sure I hear from you next Friday.
Friday.
At the
yes.
Time.
Awesome.
At
thank you. It's great to be back.
And, yes, I wish I was. I stayed down there some more because
yep.
I'm telling you, oh. And I came back here, and I said, you got to clean?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
So they did everything for you.
Oh, no.
Everything for you. Delivered your food. Cooked your food. Hey.
See, now you
see
the dilemma of those tote boys.
Yes.
It's hard to be rich.
That's right. It's hard to be rich. That's right. Rich and pampered.
Not an easy life.
Okay, Lady Tamika, thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. And I will
and
be seeing you. Next time, we're going to have your theme song, which I forgot at this time. No, you know, you were going to send that to me.
We couldn't find it, remember? Neither one of us
is that
could
right?
find it. Yeah.
Well, I got something for you instead, so that'll be it.
Awesome.
All right? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good
say
one.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Have a good one. Bye now.
Got my grandson here who is going ballistic. I guess he's hungry. I don't know.
It is that time of day.
It is that time of day. You hungry?
I ate already.
Where?
Oh.
When? Just now?
That would be fine. That grandma was up there.
Oh, so you know, so you ate already. Now if you eat, you want to come over and bother us. Yeah, okay, good. Anyway, so, Mr. Thomas, so what happened with... the kiddies last night on the other end of the island.
Oh, man, we had a great time.
Yeah?
We, got dressed up. We had a whole crowd. It was rather alarming at how big it got.
It was very slow here last night.
Oh, no. Well,
because normally we're getting crowds at the they're taking buses down here.
Yeah, two things about that. One, a lot of people this year, now our regular neighbors, half of them were there, have a warrant and all that, but a lot of them are going to malls and stuff now and just wandering around where it seems safe and quiet, and you just go to door to door.
The mall is safe and quiet?
You go to the malls, what they do is they hand out candy from every store, and you just make the round of the stores and go home. But that way it's just...
That's not Halloween.
And it isn't
that's
at all.
That's garbage.
You get outside. And
absolutely. Dress up.
Go
down the
street. Scare the bejesus out of somebody.
Boy, hey.
But that's what the thing was. Yesterday we had friends of Janice, friends of Alex's. We had neighbors join us. And so we ended up with this whole group. We walked around about 15 kids. Just, it was crazy. We had a blast.
I understand that the mask was here and scared some kids so bad out in the front of the house here. And the one little girl, she looked up and saw the mask and she said, Mommy, Mommy. And she was just like Wonder Woman. I said, but
you can't be scared.
You can't
Woman.
Be scared. You're Wonder Woman.
I think actually, by seeing the picture, it's not just the mask. It was the long, bony fingers. That's I saw you were the Incredible Hulk. You were awesome. Yep. So he was Patriot, Iron Man, or Iron Patriot.
and you were the hawk. Okay.
And he was scared too?
Well, you know what my neighbor's son did? You'll love this one. So my neighbor, they were outside. They actually got a table out. They got a popcorn machine and popped popcorn. Everybody can give out free bags of popcorn to the whole neighborhood. So that was pretty cool. But behind, now they're sitting in the middle of the driveway with the table and everything sitting out there. All the kids come out, get candy and popcorn. Beside them on the yard is a tree. His little nephew, dressed in this horrible, horrible outfit, and then climbed the tree. And he would wait till everybody was at the table.
And jump out of the tree.
And he would jump out beside it and scream. And he scared some people so bad that they hurt themselves running away. And they finally had to stop it because they were people running over each other, knocking kids down, dropping stuff, you know, screaming bloody murder. So, he was just scaring them. He was just surprised.
That's my little grandson talking, the little grandson, not the big grandson who's 7. But anyway, we're just looking at breaking news right now that Chris Christie is now going to run for governor of Florida again, but this time as a Democrat.
Ooh.
Now, that should scare that moo-moo down there right all to heaven and back. But anyway,
we
don't have any. Now, we already talked about the GOP plan for health care. None. Okay. How about the Obamacare 3%? You know what that is? While Obama was in Boston Wednesday, he delivered a speech to the people there as scheduled. It was a private meeting of friends and supporters and well-wishers. And Jonathan Gruber of MIT, economist and an architect of both of Mitt Romney's health care plan in Massachusetts and Obamacare. This guy did them both, okay?
Yeah.
Gruber his specific expertise is predicting the effects of changes to health care policies. His model of the insurance market helped convince both Romney and Obama of the importance of including an individual mandate in their respective plans. Wednesday morning, as Gruber was preparing for his meeting with Obama, sent him for his thoughts. This is the reporter, Ryan Eliza, I'm sorry. Gruber's view is that at the moment, the technical problems associated with healthcare.gov are only a DEFCON 4 problem, mostly just a political headache for the White House. 5 is the lowest level of alarm. So it's only at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in her testimony before the House Committee on Wednesday, Secretary of Health Services Kathleen Sebelius promised that the exchange will be fully functional by November 30th. If she's right, then this episode may be just a speed bump. But if the website isn't working by the end of November, Gruber thinks that the difficulties with the ACA implementation will escalate to DEFCON 3. By that point, some people may not be able to sign up for the plan by January 1st. Those people whose plans are now being dropped will be screwed, Gruber said. If the problem is finger points until late February, Gruber thinks it will reach DEFCON 2. The law requires requirements to have health insurance by March 31st, 2014, or face a penalty. Obviously, the government can't tax people for failing to buy a product that is unavailable. In that case, Gruber said Obama will have to delay the individual mandate. Right now, shopping for the insurance policy and enrolling online still doesn't work for most users. But Gruber argued that it might not be necessary to fully repair the website to forestall disaster. At the very least, the site allowed consumers to shop for insurance online, then buyers can enroll over the phone or through a paper application. Finally, Gruber was frank about the issue that has caused the president so much political pain this week. The oft-repeated promise that any American who liked health insurance could keep it. It turns out that many Americans, probably millions, will not be able to keep the exact plan they currently have. But the details are in context. Gruber broke down the ACA winners and losers. About the 80% of Americans are more or less left alone by the Health Care Act. Largely people who have health care insurance through their employers, about 14% of Americans are clear winners. They are currently uninsured and will have access to affordable health care. But much of the current controversy involves 6% of the Americans who buy their insurance health care on individual market, which is the ACA has dramatically reformed. Gruber argues that half of these people, 3% of Americans, will have little change to their policies. And this is what we were talking about with the commissioner, Wayne Goodwin.
Yep.
Policies individually, like I do for my daughter.
Right.
Okay. I still get back $99.
Yeah.
So it depends upon what you want in your health care plan, and she has a very good health care plan.
Directly related, though, is to what you're having to have done. You know,
that's
if
right.
They use the money on you, you don't get it back. If they don't, they give it back to you.
Right.
But see, that's fair.
Well, and the other thing was that with the new policies, in order to qualify to be on the ACH plan involvement, you have to work to help your enrollee. You have to make sure that it will not cost them $1 million after their cap of $1 million.
Right.
You have to make sure that the 26-year-old is on the insurance. You have to make sure that you can go more than once when you get over 70 years of age to the doctor without having to pay more money.
Right.
You have to make sure that you've got colonoscopy care. You got to make sure you can go and get breast exams. You have to make sure that you can have an insurance company that is going to pay you back, as you said, your money if they don't use it all on you.
Right.
Today, a lot of these insurance companies do not do that, so therefore they will not qualify be under the Affordable Care Act, because the Affordable Care Act is put into a position of making these insurance companies help you stay better and healthier.
Right.
So, you know, these people that keep saying, oh, I dropped my – they're not part of insurance companies that work for firms. Their insurance company, the people bought, oh, buy this cheap. Well, hey, my insurance is going to be cheap too, but I have a $5,000 deductible. So what I did was I went back to the insurance company, my broker, and I said, hey, I can't do this. He said, don't worry about it. I'll send you another plan that is cheap that will pay for that $5,000 deductible if you ever have to use it. You go to the hospital, cost you this, good. You will pay it for you because you have an insurance with us.
Right.
So now I have, and it's not cost me as much as it was before I got the plan.
Right. But again, it's awareness. And.
But I wasn't aware.
No.
I asked.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't know that you asked.
Yeah, you don't know all the details of everything. There's no way you can know every industry.
Hey, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And if you don't ask, you're never going to know.
Well, here's one thing I wish the progressives would just get over.
Get over.
You know, it's like it's done. It's over with. Now, why don't you work toward making it better? You know, everything can be tweaked and fixed, but I don't understand the opposition anymore. They just need to work toward helping out. Because imagine if all of the Republican energy and money and time and effort for the last couple of years had been plowed into making healthcare succeed. Man, we'd have a Mac Daddy system just flying along, you know? Imagine if they had.
But that's the reason why.
I know.
They don't want it.
I know.
Flying along.
It's just amazing, though, how they.
And because we also have and I'll say it again, a black man in the White House. That's why. Interloper. He's there. And by the way, the food stamp program. We didn't get a chance to play about the interview, which we'll play next week, with that Rachel Maddow had with Senator Harry Reid, the majority leader of the Senate, which was absolutely fabulous. And I'm glad Rachel interviewed him, and I want to play it for the people next week because it is very important. But food stamp program, they're going to cut $40 billion
right
out of food stamps because they said that people are abusing it because they're selling it.
You know, they probably lost a lot of money on those airplanes that are sitting.
Yeah, they lost a lot of money. I think there's a lot of food stamps on those jet fighters. Anyway, that's 900, as I said before, over 900,000 military veterans, 47 million people will have their benefits reduced.
And the thing is, food stamps really do work. They pay.
Oh, of course.
They keep people healthy, which, you know, lowers costs across the board.
And you can't buy beer or cigarettes with them.
No, you can't do anything.
You can't buy anything that's taxable, I think, right?
Right. So you can only buy, and you can't even buy all foods, just real food.
You can't buy any foods? I don't think you can buy frozen foods.
I'm not sure. But I know that...
I know you can buy all fresh foods, milks, breads.
And the thing is, this type of thing just helps. It's just to help. And to begin with, you only get, like, what is it, $1.40?
40 a day.
$1.40.
McDonald's, you can't go to McDonald's. Well, you can't buy McDonald's.
Even, this is, like, not much, but it's a help, right? It just helps people. And just by this little bit alone, it lifts something like, what was it? I think 20 million people out of poverty every day.
47 million people will have their food stamp program reduced. So we got at least 47 million.
Just,
oh, yeah, out of poverty, right.
Just out of this, just right. this one program
right.
actually raises that many people above the poverty level.
Correct.
So then now we're going to have all of them fall into poverty, which means that officially they all are going to be a burden on the system.
That's right.
They're all going to have assistance across the board and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So, again, it's shooting yourself in the foot, saying, look at there.
But we're not shooting ourselves in the foot. They're shooting those people in the foot.
No, but they're shooting all of us in the foot because now we're all going to have to pay the huge cost when these people
get sick.
They fall into poverty and start having to use other programs. They fall behind on their bills, everything.
Now,
because this is just a little
assistance. Is this... More, all right, say they reduce that by $40 billion. Where's that $40 billion going?
Yeah, you would think it's just magically going to fix the economy or something like that.
But you don't think it's going to do that?
No.
Where do you think it's going?
Oh, come on. Are you kidding me? These guys usually misappropriate things into whatever they want, and it'll just go into the coffers of whatever little pet programs.
You mean it's going to go down that rabbit hole?
Like planes that don't fly. That's exactly where all that type money goes. They reroute it into programs they want from programs they don't. It isn't about the money. The money's still spent. It's about which program it goes to.
No.
All they're doing is taking it from the pocket of the poor and putting it into some fat cat pocket for someone.
Are you actually saying that?
No, I'm dead serious. Guarantee you.
Now, so you're saying that none of these, that $40 billion that they want to cut, of course it's not going to be cut because the state, the Senate is going to make sure that don't happen. But I just, what was her name?
Pat
said, hey, how lucky you are.
Here's the thing. Come and let's, we'll end since this was a Halloween show. Back to Halloween.
Yeah.
I don't understand the mentality, whether it's just basic humanity, basic compassion, or coming from their supposed Christian point of view. But these right-wingers who think...
Why do you keep saying that? I don't like that when you use the word Christian. I just don't like it.
But they're
not Christian.
But they're not. They're not Christian.
Not Christian.
It's not compassionate at all. But where does, like, taking $1.40 out of the hands of a starving person, how is that in any way, sense, shape, or form beneficial to society or good? How is it? It's just pathetic.
Because they're lazy.
No, it's pathetic and cruel.
They're lazy. That's why you want to take it from
them. Came from Halloween. Halloween is where you go out and spend, $87 billion just to throw
second to Christmas
candy at people.
Second to Christmas.
Yeah. And to wear silly costumes and run around all night. Okay. So, if we can spend that much money on tooth decay from candy and all that kind of stuff, why can't we get $1.40 to starving people? I mean, I don't get it. How is that even?
Yeah, well, you see those burgers on TV, the advertisement, he says, please help these starving kids give 40 cents a day.
Yeah.
That's what they want, 40 cents a day.
It's just pathetic. They want 40 cents a day. They don't want any money.
They don't want any money, right, absolutely. But we'll give it away to other countries.
Yeah, and they'll give it away to themselves in tax breaks.
There was a, I was trying to remember what I was trying to say about the Bill O'Reilly the other time, and that was that he made the reference to Obama trying to beat all the Republicans who were trying to, saying that they were all money grubbers and this, that, and they shouldn't be doing this. Well, the real problem was that when Christ
beat these tax people. Mm-hmm. They were doing it inside the synagogue. That's the reason why he beat them. He says, you got to get outside here, not inside here.
Well, here's a perfect example of this, the opposite of this, using your cool new pope, you know, your Catholic. So your cool new Pope Francis, you see what he did with that guy? You remember the guy we talked about, the German guy? Okay, so this guy that was the head of the Archdiocese of Germany.
Right,
who gets caught with a, you know, $42 million mansion or whatever it was, and then he got kicked out. And then what did the Pope do? He investigated and said, go ahead, investigate. We won't pass judgment. Then he passed judgment and said, okay, you're out, and your house is now a soup kitchen. A soup kitchen.
Oh, see, I was away when that happened. Is that right?
He
said to a soup kitchen.
He gave it to the poor.
But where did the guy get? Oh, man, I got to read that.
Hey,
listen.
You know what?
We got to go.
We need a Pope intervention on the.
We got 90 seconds. Goodbye, everybody. Happy Halloween if you hadn't had it already. Happy All Saints Day. Happy All Souls Day tomorrow. Okay.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you've gotten this far. And tell yourself, how lucky you are.